Chicago Bears insider Adam Hogue. From Top Chef and the new restaurant Barrio Chef Katsuji Tanabe. And the author of How to Speak Midwestern, Ted McClellan. And now, a man who not only speaks Midwestern, but eats it too, Justin Kaufman.
So you just mean fries, right? Is that that's what that means? I just eat a lot of fries. I do. A lot of fries. And shakes. And beef. And shakes. I eat it all. And I feel it every day, especially in this job in which I sit in this chair for 4 hours. So you get to about 10 o'clock tonight, I'm like, oh, what was I thinking with the extra patty? I have the extra patty on that burger. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight, 720 WGN. I'm excited to be here tonight because it's almost a holiday for the city of Chicago. Because it's the first day of Bears camp. Bourbonnais is bustling. Adam Hogue is down there, and he's going to join us at 8 o'clock tonight. And we're going to talk about, this is a new segment we're working on where we're going to spend some time to talk Bears football this year. Obviously, we love to talk about it, and we want to talk more. But the idea of this being the first day, there are a lot of unanswered questions on the field and off with the sport, what's happening around it, with the big study that came out about CTE. We'll talk with Adam Hogue about all the latest from Bears camp and, of course, the beginning of the NFL season tonight. It's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up after the 7:30 news tonight, we're going to talk about the state of Illinois, the other big game in town. What's going to happen with school funding, of course. But more importantly, what's going to happen when we talk about reform, we talk about the taxes and what happened with this budget. Almost inevitably, we talk about what needs to happen to shrink government. There are 7,000 units of government in the state of Illinois, the largest in the state, in the country. So what's it going to take for us to really start to make that move, to move the needle, to jump headfirst into trying to tackle that issue? The fact that there's just too many units of government in the state of Illinois. Well, Transform Illinois, the Metropolitan Planning Council, and others are all in. They have some news for us this week as they delivered some findings to Springfield, and they have some bills that are actually working their way through in the Senate and House about shrinking and changing the way we do government in the state of Illinois. It's promising. So we'll talk with them coming up after 7:30. Tonight as well, coming up at 10 o'clock, Ted McClellan joins us, one of my favorite segments. So excited to have him back, where he can figure out where you're from by how you talk. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. He's been on the show a couple times now. I love doing this segment. People call in from all over the region, the Midwest, and Ted can guess where you're from. It's so fun. We give away prizes. We'll give away his book. If you can guess what some of the phrases mean from certain places. So that's coming up 10 o'clock tonight. Always great to have Ted in studio. And then also tonight, Chef Katsuji Tanabe will be here. Chef Tanabe is the colorful chef from Top Chef. He's been on 3 different seasons, Top Chef Mexico. He was also in Top Chef Charleston, Top Chef Boston. I don't know if they did a Top Chef Mundelein. I don't know if they did that regional yet. But he just opened a brand new restaurant called Barrio right here in Kinsey. He grew up in Mexico. He's a Los Angeles chef, but he comes to Chicago to enter this culinary scene. We will talk with Chef Tanabe coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So big show tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. And I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carry out. Stay with us. It's The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's carry out. Here are today's top stories. Well, what is happening in the communications office in the White House? When the savior Anthony Scaramucci took over, I was all in. Beautifully coiffed hair, crisp collared shirts, off-the-cuff sports metaphors, all about winning. I loved it. Now he's calling reporters on the record, ripping on his own White House crew, saying he's going to fire everybody in sight, and even throwing vulgarities out about Steve Bannon and Rance Priebus. I mean, watching Scaramucci this week is like going deep on someone's Twitter feed. It's like you start, it just gets meaner. I mean, Spicer was angry, right? Mooch, that's what he calls himself, Mooch, is downright vicious. I usually like vicious, but somehow the White House has decided this would be the course of action to bring the country together. Or probably more accurate, tear us apart. I want to get a t-shirt made that says, "The Mooch is loose." What do you think? Yeah? But I'm afraid that every liberal I run into would be like, "Not funny. You can't make that joke. No. Don't normalize." And then I feel like every guy who comments something pro-Trump on your friend's anti-Trump Facebook rant, get him! Get your pitchfork, get him! Another strange move to antagonize the LGBT communities. Yesterday, Trump banned transgenders from serving in the military. Today, the Justice Department is arguing, to no one in particular, that gays should not be protected under federal civil rights laws. Currently, the law interprets it that you can't fire someone based on their sexual orientation, but the Department of Justice is going out of their way trying to omit that interpretation from the law. What? Again, is somebody lobbying for this? Man, if I just had the power to fire the gays. Right? But I mean, maybe I'm off. Is there a push for it? Maybe I'm off. Maybe I'm not paying attention. But could you imagine if any other group was in a situation that the Justice Department was pushing for African Americans to be disqualified or Hispanics? I guess I'm trying to figure out what the Trump administration's play is here. Is he playing to his base, being pushed by a lobby, or maybe is he anti-gay? There's probably a reason to do this, and it's probably because someone can make money off it. Let's be just haven't figured it out yet. Yesterday, I said that the Foxconn manufacturing plant was a huge win for Wisconsin, and it is. But I also didn't realize the $3 billion in subsidies that the state of Wisconsin offered to get the company to relocate. One columnist said today, for that kind of money, the state could have given every man, woman, and child in the state of Wisconsin a new iPhone. And the Washington Post said that the deal would cost Wisconsin about $230,000 per job in missed tax revenue. Wow. So when you hear the political rhetoric that Illinois is unfriendly to businesses and we could have gotten Foxconn, maybe think twice. Is the idea of being a business-friendly state, just mean give as many tax breaks as you can to get them here? I mean, I'm not trying to be snarky. I wonder about the cost-benefit of jobs versus not paying your fair share in taxes. I guess it evens out in the wash, but I guess jobs are more important. But every time I hear that now, when I hear, you know, we're not job-friendly, we're not business-friendly in the state, is that what it means? We don't have the ability to give that many subsidies? It's a lot. A new study out questions of medical advice to finish the full course of your antibiotics. Do you see this story? It's been said that, you know, if an infection clears up, you need to finish using all of the antibiotics prescribed for fear that if you cut it short, you'll be adding to the antibiotic resistance, which kind of sounds like a group that was led by Forrest Whitaker in Star Wars. We are the antibiotic resistance. But now scientists are saying, no, it's the exact opposite. What? You don't have to finish it at all. And actually finishing it all is why we're having this problem. Come on, doctors, get it together. I mean, we know you're guessing. Everyone knows that you're guessing. But could you, I'm sorry, but when you guess absolutely wrong, just try to guess right once in a while. Jeez. Chicago Cubs are asking for more night games at Wrigley. The mayor said no. He pointed out that the club took the allotted night games for concerts, so you can't have your cake and eat it too. To which the Cubs replied, can we have that cake at 7:05 p.m.? Cubs are now asking for the major league maximum of 54 night games, just like every other team in baseball. You knew that was coming, right? The minute they got rid of that Yum Yum Donuts, you knew it was coming. Craziest story of the day by far. A 2-year-old fell out of a stroller and through the gap between the platform and the Blue Line CTA train. That's such a small area. Wow. And the best part is that she's okay. I don't know. That's the stuff of nightmares. Something tells me that 2-year-old's going to have a thing for trains, right? Or freak out when Thomas comes on PBS. Hi, I'm Thomas. No! Next week, the popular ice cream purveyor Jenny's Ice Cream is giving away free product in conjunction with the opening of their Old Town location. And it better be chocolate. If they're giving away just the Brambleberry Crisp, I'm going to lose it. I'm out. I'm going to be that guy who goes and stands there. What other flavors are free? In weather, hot and muggy. It wanted to rain so bad today. It really did. High wind advisory. Actually, I mean high waves at the beaches. I guess that's better than E. coli. In sports, the football season's officially underway. The Bears had their first practice in Bourbonnais today. It's that time of the year where we all say, wow, Trubisky threw a nice pass. He's going to be a star. 13-3. All eyes on, well, every position. But good to see Danny Trevathan out there stretching with teammates. Looks like he might be ready for the season opener. Also, good to see Kyle Long out there. Not good to hear that Pernell McPhee is starting the camp on the PUP list. It's not certain when he'll return, if he'll return, but it's early. That doesn't mean anything when it comes to Bears injuries. I mean, the Bears are still injured from last year. I mean, how unlucky can you be that these are injuries from last year? I don't know. Add some milk to the lunch diet. Strengthen up those bones. Or at least starting, I mean, maybe force players to take the old proverbial needle. Let's go back to the 70s, right? Or maybe it's a whirlpool problem. They got to work on the whirlpools. A new study came out on brains in former NFL players. Almost all the brains have some sort of CTE issue. 110 brains out of 111. It's having an impact as a 26-year-old lineman from the Ravens abruptly retired today, citing the study. The bigger question is really about how long the NFL knew about this possible connection. That's always it. Can't some of those White House leakers get jobs at the NFL? Because my guess is that the league knew what was up. They probably knew back in the 70s and were like, hey, guys, you want to try this neck collar? Why don't you try those? Those look cool. Oh, that's going to look great. No reason. It just looks cool.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, first preseason game is in 2 weeks. Adam Hoge joins me tonight at 8 o'clock to talk about the first day of camp. The Cubs and Sox wrap up their Crosstown Classic tonight. The G-Spot, the Cubs have a 2-1 series lead and will look to finish off the Sox. The Cubs are currently all alone in first place after the Brewers lost yesterday. So how about that? July 27th, and our sights are firmly set on another playoff run. What a difference 2 weeks makes. Tonight, John Lester goes against Doesn't Matter. He's a great left-handed pitcher, Doesn't Matter. Yesterday, Yoan Moncada hit his first home run. That matters. Today, Dan Jennings was shipped to the Rays for minor league first baseman, and the rumor mill is heating up that there's interest in Melky Cabrera, so expect the milkman to be delivered to a different team by the end of the month. Hope he's not spoiled.
Milk. Yum, 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 yum.
You know what the what when reached for comment, the prospect monster was like, yum, 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 yum. More, 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 more. Where's my prospects? Help me find my prospects. And finally tonight, area hospitals are reporting there are more bursts this month, which is being attributed to the Cubs winning the World Series. How about that? But it also begs the question, fellows, the Cubs make you horny? It's weird. That's the carryout for July 27, 2017. Hey, I hope you like Diet Right. That's all we got left in the cooler tonight. Hey, don't complain. It could be worse. Could be Tab. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about transforming Illinois, whether or not we can actually take on government bloat. That's the topic coming up after the news here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
During a crosstalk with Roe, I was laughing at our conversation how artists make up some costs or actually make more money by selling stuff.
Right.
We went to the Monster Truck Rally at the Allstate Arena earlier this year. I now have plush running around my house than I can shake a stick at. And you pay a premium price for that stuff.
So, I mean, it works.
It did.
Because you know what's going to happen. That Monster Truck Rally is going to come back through town, and everyone's going to be excited because they've been playing with or wearing the merchandise for all year.
The Martier family funded the Gravediggers Kids College Fund, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Anyway.
Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Adam Hoge's going to join us from Bourbon A, the first day of Bears camp. Like I said, it should be a holiday. luckily, I'm not in charge because the people in studio tonight would be like, no, that's going to cost money, guys. You can't have a holiday for Bears camp. But I think that Chicago knows that this is a special day. They always say for the Cubs, it's hope springs eternal, but there's something great about the first day of Bears camp where we all think we're going to go 13-3. Adam Hoge will be my guest coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. All right. Now that the state of Illinois has a budget, the lawmakers have moved on to school funding, and many of the same issues that plagued the political debate over budgets have moved on as well. We seem to be in a vicious circle, arguing reforms, taxes, and efficiency in government. Some in Springfield say we got to cut to the bone. Some say we need to tax more. Others say we need to shrink government before raising more and more taxes. It's a conversation we've had on this program over the years, and tonight we continue it. What can be done in the state of Illinois to reform government? And it always starts and ends in the state of Illinois with government bloat. Illinois is a leader, quote unquote, in the country when it comes to units of government, whether it be townships or districts or overlapping departments. Mosquito abatement comes to mind. Many bipartisan critics have noted that the way to fix Illinois government is to take a closer look at this issue, the government bloat issue. But how do you do that? How do you even start that conversation? Enter Transform Illinois, a group working to eliminate some of the 7,000-plus units of government in Illinois to reduce costs for taxpayers. Two of the members of Transform Illinois are here tonight to talk about some of the options that are currently winding their way through the statehouse. Josh Ellis, vice president at the Metropolitan Planning Council, is here, and also Carol Portman. She's a president at Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. Carol, Josh, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is an issue that we've talked about on the show. I've had people in here talking. I mean, Better Government Association's taking this on. That the one thing that always stands out when we talk about government, taxes, and all the things that go ahead is that the state of Illinois is, like I said, a quote-unquote leader when it comes to government bloat.
We are number one in the country with the most units of local government by far. We were just joking. I think we could get rid of 2,000 local government units here in Illinois, and we would still be number one. So yay us, we're number one.
And that's really at the heart of when we talk about reforms and the idea of changing the way we do government. The size has to be the first thing on the table.
The size, the number, the spread, right? So just a couple specific examples, right? State of Florida has, I think, 84 counties. They have 84 school districts. State of Illinois has 815 school districts.
Hmm.
DuPage County has 38 mosquito abatement districts. 34 of them contract for their services with the same firm on 34 separate contracts, right? So some of it is just that these units of government were created at one point for a different
good
time.
Good reasons.
Yeah, good reasons, right?
Mm-hmm. At the time, yeah. It seemed like it.
Yeah.
But maybe that was the only option at the time.
Right.
I mean, is that really where this stems from, this idea that government was serving a different state of Illinois at the time when these things were, and it doesn't apply anymore?
In many instances, yeah. Many of these units of government were created for a largely rural state, not one that had a huge city like Chicago and then 9 million people living in the suburbs, right? Mm-hmm. So particularly in northeastern Illinois, a lot of these units of government that made sense when there was less population, less dense population, less infrastructure, like road districts and things like this, they made sense at one point, and it's not clear that they necessarily do anymore.
So, I mean, let's talk about Transform Illinois. The concept behind this is really to find ways to effectively shrink the government. How do you go about doing that? I mean, I would think that if there's one area that's difficult to shrink, it would be government, because there's a lot of people that want to protect that, because there's livelihoods attached to that. There's power. There's political patronage. All the things that we know about that we continue to hear about when it comes to government and politics. So how do you start this conversation and start implementing ideas to change it?
Slowly and a little bit at a time. You're exactly right. There are entrenched interests. People come up through lots of politicians who are higher level politicians now came up through the local governments, and so they have a warm, fuzzy place in their heart for local governments. But they also recognize the inefficiencies, and you start having once you have a few success stories. You know, there was a little street lighting district that there was no one left who wanted to be an official in the street lighting district, and so they successfully were able to get rid of that street lighting district. But it took, and then once that happened and everyone realized, oh, wait, no one got fired, no one lost their jobs, nothing bad happened, the world didn't come to an end.
And the lights are still on.
And the lights are still
someone
on.
Someone else is running them. That's
right.
All.
So, I mean, there's one. Check, you know, are we now, or, you right. know, that's one out of thousands, but it's that kind of blocking and tackling slow little bits that starts to get people saying, hey, wait, maybe this is a good idea. We're improving the and one of the things they do, and Josh can probably talk better about this, is talking to, you know, getting local government units to talk to each other and figure out how to provide the services that they want to provide more efficiently and effectively. And maybe they don't consolidate, at least not at first.
I mean, it's communication has to be a big part of figuring out a way to shrink government.
Yeah, and at the local level, particularly the municipal level, so cities and villages, you are seeing a lot of creativity in parts of the metropolitan region of finding ways to work together to do joint contracting or joint procurement of road salt. You know, you get more towns on one road salt deal and you get a better deal, right? So you save some money there. Same thing for painting fire hydrants or repaving streets. Glenview is a real leader in this, in organizing the communities around it to do some of this joint procurement and contracting and service sharing. But in other parts of the region, there's none of that going on, mm-hmm. right? So one of the things we're trying to do through Transform Illinois and then the work at the Metropolitan Planning Council is try to get more of those service sharing agreements started, even just by showing folks what's possible and what other folks in the region are doing.
You know, I mean, all of this seems to be something that we hear over and over and over, especially when it affects our bottom line, when we talk about taxes. That plays out in a political debate over, we saw it with the budget. I mean, this idea that there wanted to be an increase in income tax, state income tax, but a freeze on property taxes. And a lot of that, really, the underlying is at the core of this issue, that there are too many bodies that are able to tax people. And it gives you this notion that Illinois is overtaxed, or we're one of the highest tax states in the country. And people will argue that, because when you look at state income tax, or you look at some of the bigger line taxes, we're even or actually pretty low. Mm-hmm. But when you add up all these municipalities taking this and doing this and 38 mosquito abatement districts, you start to get a clearer picture of why Illinois is considered to be one of the highest taxed states mm-hmm. in the country.
Yeah, our property taxes in Illinois are quite high, and most property owners don't even realize how many different government units they're paying taxes to. It's not just the school and not just the county and the municipality. It's the mosquito abatement district, and it's the fire protection district, and it's the roads and the township, and on and on and on yeah. for a lot of folks.
One of the leaders in Transform Illinois is Dan Cronin, who's the chairman in DuPage
right,
County.
Right.
And DuPage is doing a lot internally trying to work on taking a look at some of these smaller units of government, like that street lighting district, and start to see whether or not the county can provide that service. Does that independent unit of government need to exist? They've been working at this real hard, and I think they've eliminated four small units of government in the past several years. But they have, because they've been so focused on this issue, we were able to get data from them and just map for DuPage County, depending on where you live, how many local units of government are you paying taxes to? So this is not the county itself or the state or the feds, right? It's just those local units
right.
of government. And there are areas of DuPage County where you'll have 16 local units of government with a property tax levy on your bill. And then, depending on where you are, right across the street, your neighbor could have 8, right? And so you're still able to check a book out of a library somewhere, and you're still able to drive on the road somewhere, and someone shows up if your house is on fire. But why is it that in different, even right across the street in parts of DuPage County, which takes this seriously, you've got 8 units of government versus 16? So that is just it makes it hard to be a citizen too.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Your attention is diluted. You can't, you know, do I want to get involved in the park district or the library board, or do I want to get involved in this or that? You mean, there's so many different things going on. On the one hand, it's wonderful. If I really care about libraries, I can be on the library board, and that's great, and I don't have to waste my time on all this other stuff I don't understand. But it creates this administrative
a lot
of overlap.
Carol Portman is the president at Taxpayer Federation of Illinois. Josh Ellis, vice president at Metropolitan Planning Council. We're talking about Transform Illinois. They're both members of this group that's goal is to eliminate some of the 7,000 plus units of government in Illinois to reduce the cost for taxpayers. This is the number. This is one of the biggest issues, and it always gets buried. Instead, we start talking bigger picture, ideology, other things being more business friendly. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me that this issue is one that can be bipartisan.
Oh, it is.
I think that both parties will recognize that there's an issue here. Yep. What stands in the way of this happening? Is it just the fact that, I mean, really what it comes down to, their jobs, they're people that are in these districts and departments and other places, and there's like we said, just sort of a little bit more of a protectionism going on?
It's a combination of that, definitely. There's also, it's complicated. I mean, we've, and it's little bit by little bit, and there's usually something else that's urgent, and this isn't usually urgent. And, you know, getting a budget done was urgent. Figuring out how to pay for schools, that's urgent because schools will hopefully open in a few weeks. Consolidating this township in, or this municipality and its township that are coterminous, maybe that's not quite so urgent. And so that kind of stuff gets pushed back onto the back burner fairly often.
I think the other element of what makes it hard is that for many of these units of government, at the time that they were created, the statute that allowed for their creation didn't have any language in it about how you would dissolve or get rid of that unit of government.
Interesting, yeah.
And so for many units of government, there is no way unless you go back and create some language. For others, the barrier to eliminate the unit of government requires a voting percentage much, much higher than the vote to create it, right? So a simple majority of voters had to vote to create it, but 80% have to vote to eliminate it. Right?
I was going
to
say.
So there are these barriers built into the system.
And again, I guess if I just think about it and just make a hypothetical and talk big picture, is the way to organize this to say, hey, listen, we have too much government, and I know it's way more complicated than the way that I'm sort of setting it up, but do we have to essentially have a constitutional convention where we rewrite the rules of government that says, listen, you know what, this is gone. Let's go ahead and at the county level, let's take a template like they do in Florida with school districts or what have you. Do we have to do that as a society, or is it the way to fix it is going to be every single bill that comes in and what Dan Cronin's doing in DuPage is, you know, four units of government for every 10 years. I mean, is this going to be more of a trickle effect?
I don't know.
I'll tell you the Josh Ellis opinion, as opposed to MPC or the Transform Illinois. I think yes, right? So I think the last time we had a constitutional convention was the 1970s.
Yeah,
right?
It was 69. The convention was the Constitution of 1970.
Right.
Right.
And well, it's been 50 years, right? And that's what, a third or a fourth of the history of the state, right? And we've changed so much. Think about everything in the world that exists today that didn't exist in 1970. Think about how land use patterns have changed and populations have changed, right? Is it time to take a look back at the basic underpinnings of the state? Personally, I think so.
Yeah.
But that's going to be a big lift to get that off the ground.
I was going to say the reason is there's a lot of political forces and factors that would want that for other reasons.
Sure.
They want to change
absolutely.
For their own political
partisan
rules.
Exactly. If anyone was going to draw up how should our local government landscape look in Illinois, and I'm starting from scratch, it would not be the way it is today. And the reason it's that way is for all these historic things. A lot of those things predate the 1970 Constitution, and in fact, there was a provision in the 1870 Constitution that predated the 1971 that was one of the reasons that we had this proliferation. There was a limit on how much borrowing they could do. And so if you wanted to build a new school or you wanted to build a new library, you couldn't do it with your municipal budget because you'd already borrowed too much.
Oh, so they would create a new unit of government.
That provision, that provision was taken out. So the 1970 Constitution, I think the framers thought they were doing a good thing and fixing that problem by taking that out. It's just that the laws themselves didn't continue that trend.
I understand why it would be difficult to do that, and I understand. But I wonder if it comes down to, not unlike what the federal government wants to do with the tax code and change, simplify things, if that's just necessary for us so we're not in a position where it's a trickle down every single House and Senate bill that goes through.
I think it may be, but the reality is in the last until the last couple of years, we also weren't trying very hard, right?
That's true.
And so in the last couple of years, we've seen, you mentioned on the air and then right before, all the folks that you've talked to recently that are actually members of Transform Illinois.
Yeah, right.
Right? You mentioned Jack Franks up in McHenry County, Better Government Association, both part of Transform Illinois, right?
So
one of the things that we have done in the spirit of talking about government consolidation is we've tried to consolidate our respective efforts at the civic level and with folks from both sides of the aisle in Springfield to come together and start developing legislative agendas about this. And we're starting to see more and more activity. So a couple of years ago, you would see one, two bills introduced that had anything to do with government consolidation or service sharing or any other ways that we can modernize governance. Last year, there were like 26, and this year, there were like 35. So it is growing as more and more people get interested as things start to pass. And they might look little, right? But DuPage County a couple of years ago had to get a bill passed to give itself the authority to review these local units of government within its boundaries that it was naming people to the board for.
It's fascinating.
Other counties didn't have it, and now we're trying to get that for other counties.
Well, let's do this. I love it. One group, one goal. Transform Illinois, a group working to eliminate some of the 7,000 units of government in the state, reduce costs for taxpayers. Josh Ellis, Vice President of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Carol Portman, President of Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. Two of the members of Transform Illinois joining me tonight. We'll continue the conversation, right? Let's continue it. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, and what a special day here in Chicago. The Bears began their 2017-2018 campaign today in Bourbon A. Their first practice, training camp. There's something special about Bears training camp. Images of Jim McMahon on a moped or Walter Payton signing autographs in Platteville crossed the mind. Now it's time to get to know all of the offseason acquisitions, the rookies, and a coaching staff that finally says, they have the roster that they want. It's a good time to be a Bears fan, and it's a great time to welcome Adam Hoag, WGN Radio Bears beat reporter, to the download. Adam, great to talk to you. How's Bourbon A?
Oh, it's the same as it always is. It doesn't really change.
Also, tonight we got Adam for the hour tonight, so if you have any thoughts, questions, or comments about the 2017 Chicago Bears, the lines are open, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. And we will respond. All right, Adam, let's talk about this. I kind of just mentioned right there the nostalgia of Bears camp. Do you feel it? Do you feel something in the air on the first day of Bears training camp?
Yeah, I like training camp from the standpoint that I think it is important to start every season with some kind of event that brings the whole team together. You know, not every NFL team does this anymore. Some teams have training camp at their own facilities where they're at year-round. And some of those do try to set up a training camp atmosphere by making the players stay in hotel rooms and, you know, report every day. Others, though, just say, oh, you know, you could stay at home and come and just like it's a regular work day during the season. But, I still think there's some value to going off somewhere. And actually, the Bears aren't even the extreme. Teams like the Cowboys go to California for their training camp and then come back to the Dallas area and get ready for the season. And I do think that there's, you know, staying in a dorm room obviously isn't ideal, especially when you're talking about big football players don't always fit in these rooms very well. But, you know, it's all about work. You come down here to Bourbon A, and these guys don't have a whole lot of free time. They're expected to wake up early, get in the recovery room, lift weights, whatever it is, go to meetings, go to practice. After practice, there's more meetings, and they're required to work. And this is really, you know, a three-week boot camp for them. And it's not just football. You know, I think there's a lot of value to training camp, too, in Arizona for baseball and things like that. But this is very hardcore being on a campus setting like the Bears are.
You know, it's interesting you say that some teams have done away with it. It does feel kind of antiquated, the idea of putting a team on a college campus and having them do the 2-3 week boot camp. But, I mean, how do the players react? I mean, do they see it as sort of a, ugh, roll your eyes, I can't believe I got to do this again? Or do they buy into the sort of mental idea of team and chemistry and getting to work?
Yeah, I think that for the most part, if they're just being completely honest about the idea of being away from their families, especially some of the older players, they don't necessarily love it, but I think that those veterans that have been in the league long enough, and in the NFL, your NFL life doesn't really last that long. You know, it's for most players, you're lucky to make it 3 years. So the ones that are to the point where they're veterans and they have families that they're leaving, they've been in the league long enough where they understand how it works. They understand what's beneficial to a team. And I think a lot of those guys would tell you that while they don't necessarily like it, they understand the benefits of it. And I think for the younger guys, it's especially rookies, it has a lot of benefits because you take all the distractions out. That's really the big key, is you're taking a lot of the distractions out. You're setting these players' mindsets for the rigors of the NFL season and kind of establishing early what's important: rest, recovery, hard practices, because once the pads go on Saturday, that's when the real evaluation starts. So it is very beneficial, and I think most players would at least admit that, even if they don't like training camp.
John Fox, now you got a better understanding of how he runs training camp, just a couple years in now, and you've been around other coaches. Can you tell the difference the way that a certain coach will run a training camp?
Absolutely. I mean, so now I've been through this with three head coaches. You had Lovie Smith, and all three have been really different. Lovie Smith loved the practice at 3 p.m., okay, right at the hottest part of the day down here in Bourbonnais. If you've never been to Bourbonnais, and those listening to us right now who live down in the Kankakee, Bourbonnais, Bradley area, they know this. I keep turning on the news. I've been watching WGN TV today, and Skilling's talking about how beautiful of a day it is in Chicago, and we're getting winds from the north, so it's nice and comfortable, and the humidity's all gone. Yeah, well, it's all here in Bourbonnais. I mean, when it's nice in Chicago, it is still baking here in Bourbonnais. I don't necessarily know the science behind it. Maybe Tom Skilling can tell us sometime. But it just sort of sits in this valley, and it is always hot. It's very rarely comfortable down here. And Lovie Smith used to love having practice at 3 p.m. when it was at its worst to get these guys ready for the season. Now, you go to Mark Trestman, who followed Lovie Smith. Trestman loved – I'm starting to forget. It was either 8 or 9. It was at least 9 a.m. practices. There may have even been some at 8. So get up early in the morning before the humidity gets here and take it easy. And he even went to the extreme of he hated guys being on the ground. No one on the ground. Try to avoid injuries. And then what did we see? What was the theme of the Mark Trestman era that Ed Obradovich and Dan Hampton would just pound the table saying, these guys are so soft on defense, specifically on defense. They're so soft. They're not ready. And it was a mentality I think was actually accurate by the time you got to year two, that they just were not tough enough. And that was part of, I think, the struggles that John Fox and Ryan Pace had when they tried to flip this roster over, that they did try to establish a mentality and a new culture quickly, and Fox did run camp tougher than Mark Trestman, but that was a really low bar. And now they're starting – what we're seeing this year is a new schedule from John Fox that has built-in recovery days. So the Bears are not going to have a three-day stretch down here where they're full padded up and going as hard as possible. It's only going to be 2 days at a time, and then there might be a non-padded practice, or what we're seeing already tomorrow. The first padded practice is Saturday. To make sure everybody's ready for Saturday, tomorrow is going to be one of these recovery days, even though they've only had one practice so far. It's a lighter day. It's going to be mostly meetings and a walkthrough to make sure everybody's healthy and ready to go Saturday. And they really think that that this is going to help them, because they're still going to go hard on those hard days. So they're still going to try to toughen these guys up for the season.
Right.
But they want these guys to be recovered, because they think that last year in training camp, really the last 2 years, part of the reasons why these injuries started to pile up was because they weren't getting enough rest.
Well, that's interesting. And obviously the Bears have had injury problems in the last couple of years. We'll see if that helps. Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Sports, the Bears beat reporter for the station. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what we can expect from this squad. Adam Hoge on the Download 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking Bears camp. Adam Hoge on the line from Bourbonnais. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in on the convo. We talked a little bit about camp and what it means, or let's talk about the Bears squad. You know, it's not about, you know, who was added. It's also about who's not there this year. And why don't we start with that? Jay Cutler. This will be the first Bears team without Jay Cutler in a long while. It's hard to even fathom.
Yeah, it is. And it's a little weird to get used to. You know, if there's one thing today that really stood out as you're watching the same practice fields and the same routine that you're kind of used to coming down here, no number six. And I even commented to somebody in the middle of practice, you know, past years there was no quarterback competition. I mean, you weren't really analyzing every single throw that Jay Cutler was making. I mean, I do remember a couple years ago there was like he didn't throw a turnover for nine days. Or something like that we kept tracking. But like that was really because he was just throwing the ball really well, and it was of note. You know, today I really found myself looking at Glennon, looking at Mitch Trubisky, and comparing these guys, even Mark Sanchez, because he's technically still the number two right now. And it's kind of fun. I love, and I think, Justin, you know this from the NFL draft, I love breaking down quarterbacks. And so it's really fun to be able to do that. I mean, Glennon is the unquestioned starter here. The Bears have been very clear about that. But we also know that long term, it's Mitch Trubisky's team. So it's really fun, even just on this first day, to be looking at them and comparing their games because they are different.
Do you see glimpses of why the Chicago Bears would have moved up in the draft and for a guy like Mitch Trubisky and a couple of the plays that have been talked about today, the bomb down the sideline, the rolling out play that I've read three different ways?
Yeah.
Do you see glimpses of why he was picked so high?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and look, the first one down the sideline today, I'll preface it like I always do. They're not in pads today, and you can't hit the quarterback even when they are wearing pads. So it really, the games are going to be what matter. But the first pass down the sideline today, you're dealing with Mitch Trubisky's on the third team right now, so he's throwing to Tanner Gentry, who's an undrafted wide receiver out of Wyoming. Those are the kinds of players that he's working with right now, since he's not one of the starters or even on the second team, which the Bears have made very clear. But Gentry actually is a rookie who I think has some upside and could potentially make this practice squad, so he's someone to remember. And Sherrick McManus, who most Bears fans know, he's actually the longest tenured Bear now, if you can believe that. Sherrick McManus
wow.
is. I know. That shows you the roster turnover. So they were one-on-one down the right sideline, and Mitch Trubisky threw a perfect pass because McManus was actually in good coverage, and he just put it right over the top, dropped it in there. Gentry made a nice catch. So it was a nice throw, nice catch, and you're going, okay, that's a good throw. The one I loved that you just hinted at, Justin, was a throw that not every quarterback can make. And be careful, I'm not calling Mitch Trubisky Aaron Rodgers or anything, but it was an Aaron Rodgers-like throw on the run. We've seen this so many times where Aaron Rodgers will just sort of flick his wrist, so he's just running away from pressure. You think there's no way he can get a pass off, and he just sort of flips his wrist. It doesn't even look like a full throwing motion, and the ball somehow travels 20 yards downfield. And in this case for Trubisky, that was pretty much the throw, and it was accurate to Daniel Braverman. So that was the one wow moment today, and I think I tweeted that at the time where I think I actually said, whoa, because it was really the first time with Mitch Trubisky now that I've said, that's an NFL throw, that's why the Bears drafted him number two overall.
You know, I mentioned that, you know, we talked Jay Cutler's not there, Alshon Jeffrey's not there as well, a lot of pressure on Kevin White, couple drop balls today, but Kevin White is the heir apparent, although I'm not sure he's earned it since he's been hurt the last 2 years,
right.
But he's the number one for this Bears team.
You know, and I sort of wonder, the Bears would not admit this, you know, openly, but I sort of wonder if they're expecting Cam Meredith to actually emerge as the number one this year.
Really?
Now that would obviously be disappointing, considered that you drafted Kevin White number seven overall, and Cam Meredith was an undrafted free agent that came in the same year. But you know, however you get him, it doesn't really matter. If Kevin White turns out to be a bust and Cam Meredith ends up being a great number one,
who cares, right?
Well, look, yeah, it doesn't look great that you drafted Kevin White number seven overall, but you did also, you get credit for turning an undrafted guy into a stud. We'll see how it plays out this year. I think Meredith is poised for kind of a breakout year, as much as last year sort of was one for him. I think this year will be even more of one. And then with Kevin, I'm not giving up on him by any means. I just, What worries me is you heard Ryan Pace bring up the word confidence yesterday in his opening press conference down here in Bourbonnais. Now, I'm not going to knock Kevin White if confidence is still an issue. He's broken the same leg twice. I don't know how confident you could be if every time you go on the field, your leg is breaking, right?
Yeah.
That's tough. But, you know, last year when Kevin White got off to a little bit of a slow start, it was clear that he wasn't necessarily – it looked like he was thinking too much, right?
He looked like a rookie. I mean, second-year guy.
It was understandable because it was the first time he actually was playing in NFL games. And then all of a sudden in week three in Dallas – he had a play, I think it was down the left sideline, where he caught the ball, he lowered his shoulder, he ran over a defender, and he got tackled right there, but he got up with some fire. I mean, he got up, and I think he signaled first down, and you could just tell, okay, he's playing with emotion, and that's the guy they sold us on, and that's the guy you saw at West Virginia. You saw a very physical wide receiver, not in the Alshon Jeffrey go-up-and-get-it mode, but in the I'm going to catch the ball and run with it and run guys over mode, and he had that, and we haven't really seen that here in Chicago because it seemed to click in week three. He carried that into week four against the Lions last year, and then he got hurt in that game, and then we didn't see him the rest of the year. So I think confidence is still an issue. I think he's still thinking too much. If he could get all that figured out, the ability I think is still there, and there's still hope for Kevin White.
You know, I mean, the addition would be Marcus Wheaton as well. He dropped a ball and, you know, today as well. But I mean, do you see, I mean, Marcus Wheaton was a Pittsburgh Steeler. He was some injury issues as well. Does he play any factor in being an offensive weapon for this team?
I think so. I mean, they brought in a lot of guys like Victor Cruz, who, if he still has ability, we know he can play. He's a household name in the NFL at this point. They brought in Kendall Wright, who's a former first round pick, who's kind of not lived up to expectations. Reuben Randall is a name NFL fans probably know. These are all the guys that are here, but Marcus Wheaton's the one who got paid guaranteed money at a decent rate. So you can always kind of go back to the contracts with free agents and understand, okay, they gave this guy a lot of money. They didn't even give Victor Cruz a lot of money. So they have high expectations for Marcus Wheaton. I think he has the inside track at winning the slot receiver job, and actually he had a nice catch from Mike Glennon. Try to be fair to both of these quarterbacks. Mike Glennon also had a nice throw today for a deep touchdown that Marcus Wheaton brought in. But then on the very next snap was when Marcus Wheaton dropped the ball. So, I mean, we can't pick apart every single point. But I, to answer your question, I do think the plan is for Marcus Wheaton to be the number three wide receiver. I mean, it's very possible week one against the Falcons, it's Kevin White, Cam Meredith, and Marcus Wheaton who get the start.
Adam Hoge joining me tonight. Okay, we're going to talk. We're going to take a break and an update with Rob Martyr in the news. And then we come back. I want to talk about identity because obviously this team's identity is on the defensive side of the ball. It always has been in Chicago, but we haven't talked about the defense. A lot of retooling in the offseason, especially in the secondary. But we'll talk about what are the strengths and what's the identity of the Chicago Bears team. Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Sports, joining us from Bourbonnais. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. We're talking Bears football here tonight. The Big Table, Adam Hoge, WGN Radio, Bears beat reporter live in Bourbonnais as he covers the training camp for the Chicago Bears, which got underway today. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you've got some questions, comments, thoughts about the campaign kicking off for this year's Chicago Bears. Adam, I want to start. I'm going to start with Nicholas. I'm going to bring him in just a second because as we shift the conversation to the defensive side of the ball, there's a lot of questions I have about what the identity is of the squad, and a lot of it seems to always center around who isn't on the field. Nicholas, what's your question, bud?
Hi, Adam. Got a quick question about Pernell McPhee being on the PUP list. Obviously, that was like a surprise call that came out of nowhere with Ryan Pace being optimistic no one's going to actually be on the PUP list, but Pernell McPhee came out of nowhere being on it. What do you think that makes the team and how that moving forward?
Thanks a lot, Nicholas. Adam, that's the big story. I mean, the big story on the defensive side of the ball is who's not at practice.
Yeah, it seems to always be the big storyline, and you just hope that these guys don't pile up because that's kind of what happened last year with this defense, which actually did improve statistically, especially when it came to yardage. not necessarily keeping teams out of the end zone, which is ultimately what matters, but there were signs that, okay, starting to come together here, and then by the end of the year, there was just too many guys hurt, and it really fell apart, which is why I think you saw that blowout in Minnesota when it was later in the year. But look, with Purnell, this unfortunately seems to be an ongoing issue. You talk to his teammates. They all say, look, this guy makes a difference on the field, even if he's not 100%. He's just got that attitude that you love. He's always going to go after it. But at some point, you have to wonder just the physical toll. Can he still do it? And here's the deal with what happened. This latest thing is the Bears, I think Ryan Pace actually was genuine. The physicals were literally going on while Ryan Pace and John Fox talked to us yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, I guess if Purnell's physical was early, maybe they did know about this or at least knew it was going on. If it was later, maybe it didn't pop up till then. But the thing was, is this Purnell was healthy. He had lost weight, at least 10 pounds since the end of the season, 25 pounds since the end of the 2015 season. He thought that was going to be better on his knees, and all the attention had been on one of his knees, and he was healthy. He was in all the OTAs.
Yeah,
he
we saw him
good.
In the offseason looking good. Right.
And they go away for 6 weeks, and sometimes guys get hurt. And he showed up yesterday and told the training staff, hey, look, it's my other knee. I got something's going on. John Fox called it an irregularity. And his physical confirmed the issue. So it's hard to guess on how long he's going to be out. Last year, he missed the first 6 games of the season. I get a sense that was maybe more significant. Early sense here is maybe he'll be able to return during training camp, but we really don't know. And really, to get back to Nicholas's question, long term, I don't know how much you can depend on Purnell McPhee.
That's hard to hear.
There's just too many issues here. The good news is Willie Young still looks, even at his age, pretty decent. You're getting Lamar Houston, actually better than pretty decent. Willie Young's a starter. Willie Young's a good player. Lamar Houston, I thought, looked good last year before he got hurt. He's been working hard all offseason, so there's depth there. But most importantly, Leonard Floyd, I think, is set for a breakout year. And if Leonard Floyd has a Pro Bowl-type season, and he was on pace for double-digit sacks last year, then that'll make it much easier if Purnell McPhee is and look, he's already limited. He's really only my guess is even if Purnell is quote unquote healthy enough to play, he's really not going to be out on the field for more than 50% of the plays.
Adam, I guess I'd ask the question: is this where the coaching staff and the media and even the more articulate fans, is this the strength of the team? Is the strength of the team the front seven on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, what's interesting and another reason why I don't think Ryan Pace knew about this Purnell thing at the point he talked to us yesterday was because when he brought up the strength of the team, he brought up the outside linebackers, and he said the health of those outside linebackers is so crucial. But he was feeling good about it, right?
Right.
And then I don't know he would have said that if he knew Purnell was – I guess it doesn't really matter whether or not he knew it at that point. But it does get back to what Ryan Pace, the general manager, believes, is this is the strength of the team. It's certainly the strength of the defense. And making sure that these veterans like Purnell and Willie Young and Lamar Houston and Sam Acho and even guys you probably don't know Dan Scuda yet, but Dan Scuda was a guy they brought in the offseason who was played under Vic Fangio in the past, and he's probably really just a depth guy. But he's had some sacks in the past too and has had his most success under Vic Fangio. But these are all veterans. This is an older group. So you got to be more concerned about their health. But then you have the young guy in Leonard Floyd, and really, his health is crucial. 2 concussions last year, and if these guys stay healthy, I do think this is the strength.
Well, it's obviously we're talking about depth. Depth's a big issue. We saw last year where it just kind of fell apart. And I think as more of this, I want to bring Darren in as well because he's got a question about other teams as they start to pare down their rosters and cuts and training camp. Where could the Bears look for more depth? What's your question, Darren?
Hi, Adam. Hey, I got a question to ask you, and this is from the 2014 first-round pick of the Philadelphia Eagles. They drafted Marcus Smith. He's an outside linebacker in a 3-4, and they went to a 4-3. would he be a good addition to Leonard Floyd? Because this guy's only 25 years old. I was just wondering, and I looked up some of his stats. He's like 6'3", 260. I think he'd be a really good addition to this 3-4 outside linebacker because Parnell McPhee, you're right, he ain't going to make it 40, 50 plays a game.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the season. I'm going to hang up and let you talk.
Thanks, Darren. Adam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, Darren. And look, I understand why fans would think, that, okay, here's a former first rounder that just got cut. And maybe there's an opportunity there to get something out of him. And I don't completely disagree with that. I mean, if you got 90 guys on your roster, if you're going to take a flyer on a former first-round pick who's still only 25 and see if maybe
why not,
Vic
right.
Fangio can get something out of him, then now's the time to do it. So Marcus Smith is a third-year player out of Louisville who was drafted in the first round by the Eagles. And this draft pick, though, Justin, was just crushed. From the moment they picked Marcus Smith, no one thought he would be a first-rounder. Mostly projections were second and third-rounders. So everyone thought that the Eagles had reached for Marcus Smith. And sure enough, he was not able to – he's actually in his fourth year now. But in his first 3 years, he was only able to put together 4 sacks total. 2.5 last year. He has 0 starts in 3 years for a former first-round pick. Yeah. It's just not really there with Marcus Smith, you know, so I wouldn't get your hopes up too high.
I guess, Adam, I wonder, and I echo Darren's sentiment, when you're talking about looking for playmakers. And, you know, the Bears' defense over the years, and I go back to Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher, of course, and Charles Tillman and the Tommy Harrises, where it seemed like the Bears' defensive squad was one that was just salivating at the mouth to make a play.
Yeah.
And that has been – was always a hallmark of a Lovie Smith defense. And what we saw with the Trestman days and what they were doing with Mel Tucker, who was the defensive coordinator, and then also even with Vic Fangio, they've fallen off in that regard. It seems a little bit more bend, not break. They don't seem to be making big plays that rile up the fans or change the course of a game. At some point, you have to start thinking about, is that something that isn't on a stat sheet? Is that something that, you know, we have to have better players that come in with an instinct for that kind of play?
Well, certainly it's valuable, especially on defense. You got to have guys who are hungry and willing to. I think what the average football fan kind of forgets is like how tough every single snap is. Like it hurts to get popped in the mouth, you know, when you're rushing the quarterback. And those offensive linemen are bigger than you. And he puts a stiff arm. I mean, you want to take a Kyle Long stiff arm right to your face mask? I mean, even though you're wearing a helmet, it doesn't feel good. And the NFL can kind of weed out those with hands-to-the-face penalties and all that kind of stuff as much as they want, but most of it gets missed on every single snap. So it is certainly a mentality that you have to take into every single snap to get through every play and then go right back to the huddle and say, yeah, I want to do that again. I mean, who wants to do – I don't want to do that. So, yeah, absolutely, there's a mentality here. A lot – sure, you get drafted on athletic ability and how high you can jump and how fast you can run and how strong you are, but you talk to talent evaluators, and the biggest question mark and the reason why there's so many Marcus Smiths out there that just don't make it is because the hardest thing to judge when they're drafting players and even signing players is what's inside you. It doesn't come out on a stat sheet. You can't really measure it. You have to watch the tape to really understand that. And to project it from college to the NFL level is not easy. Yeah. So I think the Bears have added some guys that do have that. I think Akeem Hicks showed that last year. I think once Leonard Floyd gets more comfortable and confident in the NFL, you're going to see that kind of mentality. Jarrell Freeman, I think, has that mentality. I think Danny Trevathan has that mentality. Certainly Parnell McPhee has that mentality. But we're talking about guys here, and I would say Eddie Goldman, too. Every single one of those players I just named, only Akeem Hicks was the one who avoided injury last year.
Yeah, they have to prove they can stay on the field.
They got to stay on the field. And then meanwhile, none of those guys I mentioned are in the secondary, which is another huge problem.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break and let's talk about the secondary. We'll wrap up there. Adam Hoge, WGN Radio, Bears beat reporter, joining me tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. It's Download Here 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Joining me from Bourbonnais, Adam Hoge. Bears beat reporter for WGN Radio Sports covering training camp, the first day for the Chicago Bears 2017-2018 campaign. Hopefully it goes all the way to February. We'll see about that. I'll try my best to be optimistic. Let's talk about the secondary as we wrap up tonight. I got to say, I mean, this is the one area of the team that has been completely overhauled and an area that Chicago Bears fans hopefully will see improvement.
Well, this is the area where they have a bunch of guys who were starting games last year who are now just fighting for roster spots, okay? So I'm talking about guys like Harold Jones-Quarte, Deion Bush, Bryce Callahan, Cravon LeBlanc, okay? These are guys who really were thrown in, Adrian Amos too, thrown into spots starting NFL games where maybe they weren't necessarily completely qualified for. So to help this situation, the Bears go out, they sign Prince Amukamara, veteran corner. They go out and sign Marcus Cooper, who is just getting in the veteran territory, younger type of guy, but somebody who they believe is on the upswing and somebody that can go intercept the football. Same thing with Quinton Demps in terms of interceptions. Quinton Demps had 6 interceptions last year. Do you know how many the Bears had as a team?
Close, I'll bet.
8.
Ugh.
So Quinton Demps almost had as many interceptions as the entire Bears defense did last year. Now, he's in his 30s, so he's much older. But what it did is, so 4 of your starting secondary spots, 3 of the 4 have been filled by veterans, pushing a bunch of these other guys who really weren't qualified to just backup roles. Or in the case of like Cravon LeBlanc and Bryce Callahan, they're competing for the nickelback role, which they're probably fine at as long as they're there and not having to be on the outside covering Odell Beckham Jr.,
which is where they were all last year, right?
Right, right. Right. So it's a big difference. And then a bunch of these safeties, these younger guys, are all competing for one spot, including Eddie Jackson, the draft pick out of Alabama. And then the big question, Justin, is what happens with Kyle Fuller,
yes,
your former first-round pick, who's the only name I haven't mentioned so far? And that's a big question here. The fact he's still here tells me two things. One, they tried to trade him in the offseason, and they couldn't, so there wasn't much of a market for him. But two, that after that happens, you usually just cut a guy. That's what happened with Matt Slauson last year. They tried to trade him. They couldn't. They cut him. Okay, so Kyle Fuller's still here. That tells you that they still think there's some ability there, that if he can get healthy, and he missed the whole last year with a minor knee injury that apparently cost him the whole year, they think there's still some ability there from Kyle Fuller. But here's the problem. I don't think he's going to beat out Prince Amukamara or Marcus Cooper if they're healthy. So he needs some injury help, I think, because Kyle Fuller not really going to give you much on special teams. Mm-hmm. And it's tough to keep a backup who can't play special teams at all.
Well, we'll pay attention to the sort of possible cut list of veterans and others that may not make it through camp as we continue to talk with you throughout the camp. You know, as we wrap up here, the big storyline, I'm fascinated to hear Coach Fox and Ryan Pace to an extent say this is the roster that they wanted, that they were able to turn over a lot of the roster from the former regime, and this up and down is closer to what they want than they've ever had before. You'll hear and you watch the national program sports stuff, they say John Fox, Ryan Pace, both on the hot seat. What,
yeah.
I mean, as you look at this and you make these declarations that this is the roster that you want and this team stumbles out of the gate, where are we at as a Chicago Bears franchise? Is it the kind of thing where we might see management pull the plug on John Fox early in the season if it doesn't go well, and find ourselves in yet another rebuild at the end of the season?
Well, look, I think the Bears, whether or not John Fox believes that they can make the playoffs, I think he has instilled in the players that they believe that they're really underrated, that they're much healthier, that they brought in veterans to add to the depth, and if they can stay healthy, they have a team that is capable of making the playoffs. I mean, then everybody on the outside, you start talking about like national media. I don't think this team is getting any respect whatsoever. I think, you know, I've been reading some preseason magazines that basically say, look, the Bears are going to finish dead last in the division. They're going to be picking top 5 again in the draft. I think it's somewhere in the middle of that. I think the Bears are going to be better. And what I've been saying is, I would be less surprised if they make the playoffs than if they completely bomb out. So I think there's a greater chance they make the playoffs than they go 3-13 again. But I think it's somewhere in the middle there. And so the question about what happens with John Fox then is, very few times do coaches in the NFL enter the final year of their contract as sort of a lame duck situation. And so does John Fox win enough games where, you know, who knows what happens in New Orleans? If the Saints are bad, they could make a change and Sean Payton could be suddenly available. Ryan Pace worked with Sean Payton.
Yeah, right. Chicago guy, Naperville, right?
In New Orleans, and there's a connection there. So that's the kind of, you know, a story just came out right before I came out with you tonight, Justin, that John Gruden wants to get back into coaching. You know, so there's a lot of factors that are going to go into this. I think it's going to come down to wins and losses. It might come down to Ryan Pace's relationship with John Fox, which I don't think is as strained as some people have made it out to be. But look, I don't think the Bears are going to be bad enough that everyone's going to be saying, yep, John Fox absolutely has to be fired.
Right.
But I also don't know that everyone's going to be like, yeah, let's give him 3 more years. So it's going to be a tough situation at the end of the season.
I love it that we are on our first conversation of the year, day one, and we're like, who else is out there?
No, it's not good.
Adam Hoge, WGN Radio Sports, Bears beat reporter. You can find all his stuff, his great work, on WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam Hoge, thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it, and we look forward to continuing the conversation at Bears camp throughout the camp.
Absolutely. This was a blast, Justin.
Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, tonight we talk about the highly anticipated new restaurant, Barrio, which opened last week in River North. To call Barrio a Mexican restaurant is somewhat inaccurate. There are tacos, yes, and Mexican-inspired dishes, but the food borrows from other inspirations, including Japanese flavors. And when hearing that, Top Chef fans know exactly who's at the helm of Barrio. Top Chef Boston, Top Chef Charleston, and Top Chef Mexico contestant Katsuji Tanabe is now in Chicago. He had spent most of his career in L.A., and he's branched out to other cities recently with his restaurant Mexicosher. But he's all in as the executive chef at Barrio, and he joins us tonight on The Download. Chef Tanabe, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation. You know, I hope people can understand my accent, you know, because there's really no subtitles in radio, so we're kind of screwed on that one.
I think
one.
We're okay.
Yeah.
They'll pick it up. Welcome to Chicago. I guess we'll start, you know, Barrio opened up this week. Talk about coming to Chicago, being a chef here in this town. What did you know about it, and how's it been for the first week?
Well, the coolest thing about Chicago, I will say culinary speaking, is like we have massive chefs, you know, Graham Elliott, Charlie Trotter. There's a great history, you know, Alan Grant. You know, it's being part of the culinary, how say, society of Chicago. Yeah. For me, it's actually quite impressive, and I'm very honored to be part of it now, and hopefully let's make it a huge for a long time. You know, Chicago, I've been coming here for the last 2 years when we started working on this project, and I couldn't be happier. You know, this city doesn't feel like L.A., it doesn't feel like New York. It's a city on its own, and I have never been so welcome at any other city like Chicago.
Well, I mean, just in the last 10 years alone, Chicago's become a culinary destination. Some of the chefs that you mentioned, it really is. I mean, the James Beards come here now. This becomes a mecca for the country when it comes to food and the foodie scene. Do you feel that? Do you know that? I mean, is that accurate to say that?
It's 100% accurate. You know, you see here in Chicago massive restaurants. You know, in L.A. and New York, we have small, you know, 40, 60 seats. Here we have like 250, 300, 400 seats. People love to go out for lunch and dinner. Rooftop patios, it's a big deal. People get excited when it's summer. People want to have fun. People want to be fed. And as a chef, we want to entertain. We want to please people. So, you know, what better city than Chicago to have this type of restaurant?
I'll ask about advantages and disadvantages of cooking in a place that you're not from. The advantage, I would think, is that you can bring flavors and ideas that were not here in Chicago before. But is there a disadvantage to not necessarily being around long enough to know a lot about the Chicago diner?
Well, yes, that's a big thing. coming from LA, you're used to different size portions, and you know where your produce comes. You know, most of your produce will come either from California or Mexico. So here, I'm starting to work with like Midwestern corn and tomatoes from local tomato. It's a different game, you know. And as a chef, it's very interesting. So, you know, the disadvantage will be like, oh, well, I know that in California I'm gonna get this, this, and that. In Chicago, it's like, wow, look at this corn. Oh my God, look. You know what? I'm so impressed. It's the beef. You know, like everybody always talks about Midwestern corn-fed cattle, and sometimes we get it in LA, but here it's available everywhere. The quality of beef here, it's just impressive.
What do you miss from not being in Los Angeles? Is it, you know, when you don't have access to right across the border to go to Mexico and grab those kind of flavors? What do you miss by not being in Los Angeles?
I don't think I miss anything. I'm happy that here the vegan movement is not that big like in LA. So we can actually put beef on everything. You know, LA, I love LA, but Chicago is definitely the place to be if you want to be entertained by food. And I mean entertained because nowadays food has turned into the new theater, the new movies. You go out for dinner instead of going to the theater, instead of going to movies. People want to have an experience, you know. It's just not feeding your stomach. It's about feeding your ego, feeding your entertainment, feeding a lot of things. So Chicago is definitely the best place to, like, showcase our food.
As a chef, an executive chef here, did you have to learn that in your career, that it is more than food, that it's entertainment, that the world is changing and that the restaurant experience is much more theatrical than it's ever been?
I think as a chef, you keep learning every single day and then you start growing. And something that I learned in the last, I would say, like a couple of years, thanks to the group that I'm part, Dynamic, these guys are so into detail about, like, yes, it's just food, but at the same time, how can we make them more of an entertainment, more of a destination? And, you know, sometimes as a chef, you're in the kitchen just coming out with a dish and you're not really thinking how that dish will affect the ambiance. And then partnering with Dynamic actually has helped me to understand that, you know, food, like I was saying, it's more than just something that is going to feed you. It's part of an entertainment. So how can we make it fun? So food should be fun as well as tasty.
You've had your own restaurants in L.A. and also New York and other places. But when you're opening a new place and you're the executive chef and you're coming into Barrio right here in River North, how much control do you have on the entertainment aspect? As you mentioned, you've partnered with Dynamic, who does Bar Siena and other great places in Chicago. But how much do you think about not just the menu, but how the experience is going to unfold?
Well, the great thing is, like, running my restaurants on either New York or LA, I'm on my own. So, like, sometimes, you know, I have these ideas and I was like, oh, didn't work out. But here, being part of this massive group and they're all extremely passionate, you know, it's like, hey, I have this idea. And then they complement that idea. And they're like, well, how can we take that? You know, we have every single item that we have on the menu has gone through, like, over and over and testing, and like, how can we make it better? How can we make this more of a something that it's a wow factor without being like a gimmick? You know, we don't want to do gimmicks, but at the same time, it's like, how can we entertain people with the food? And I think we have accomplished that. Like I said, Dynamic has the knowledge of the city. They're loved in the city of Chicago. They run amazing restaurants, amazing nightclubs. So they're putting all that knowledge on a taco. You know, it all comes down to that.
Chef Katsuji Tanabe in studio. He, of course, is the executive chef at Barrio right here in River North, right here in Kinzie. And also former Top Chef contestant, a couple of different Top Chefs in Bravo. We'll do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Chef Tanabe in studio tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Wake up and watch the new WGN-TV Early Morning News with Lauren Jiggets and Dan Ponce. Traffic with Sarah Gindra and weather with Morgan Kochmeyer. Weekdays 4 to 6. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Chef Katsuji Tanabe. He is the executive chef at Barrio, the highly anticipated Mexican restaurant. And like I said at the beginning, I call it a Mexican restaurant, but it's not your standard fare Mexican restaurant because of your influence.
Well, and then nowadays, what's Mexican food? You know, Mexican food, if you talk about like authentic Mexican food, it will literally be just avocado and tortillas. Mm-hmm. Everything, it's an influence from the Spanish, the Moroccans, the Vietnamese, Chinese food. But Barrio, I'm excited about the fact that it's food that I was raised eating, you know, food that I know. In my case, my dad's Japanese, my mom's Mexican, and we never call it fusion. We would just call it dinner, and that's what it was, right. Just dinner. So when people say, well, how come you have all these things? It's like, well, I come from a family that it's a mix. And in Mexico, we have mix. You know, there's people from Asia, there's people from Europe, there's people from everywhere, just in America. But it's something that hasn't been exposed into this country. You know, just because I don't have, like, regional food from Oaxaca and I'm doing this, like, extremely authentic mole, that doesn't mean it's not
right,
Mexican.
Right.
You know, Mexican, for me, it's a way of life. It's something that I enjoy eating it. And something that we actually try to make a huge effort is, like, barrio. You can be in the mood for Mexican, or you don't have to be in the mood of Mexican. You know, when you have those parties, and this happens to me quite often. Like, where should you go for dinner? And I was like, well, we should go here. No, I don't want Italian. I don't want pasta. I don't want. Barrio, it's a place that you can actually, you know, if you're not in the mood for tacos, we have amazing fish. You're not in the mood for, like, chips. Well, have some ceviches or have the menu. It's Latin inspired, Mexican, obviously, because I'm Mexican. But you don't go there because you want to eat, like, this cheesy, gooey, right, like, you know, heavy on bean and rice dishes.
Well, I mean, we know this about you, for anyone who watched Top Chef, the three different Top Chefs that you've been on. Your background plays a big role in that show through the storylines and the narratives. But talk about, as you mentioned, your dad was Japanese, your mother was Mexican. Those flavors, you don't automatically think that the flavors of Asia and the flavors of Mexico go hand in hand. But there is some similarities with the fire.
I live in Japan for almost a year, and that's where I trained to be. After culinary school, I trained to be a chef. Something very important in Japanese food, it's the umami. Anywhere you go in Japan or Japanese food, you have that, like, strong umami. It's a monotone flavor. It's the same flavor over the whole dinner. You know, like, you have the dashi, you have the misos, you have the soy sauce, which are very rich, but they're monotones. And then you go with the Mexican side, that we are, like, heavy on spice, lime, cilantro, high acidity. And then when you marry those flavors, we're actually coming out with an amazing combination, because something that I learned on Top Chef, you know, through different seasons, is, like, you want to have a well-balanced dish, something that has that sweet, that spicy, that sour, that umami. So what better type of cuisine that utilizing flavors are already in my family? You know, when I was young, my dad would always cook with miso. That would be, instead of using salt, let's put miso, let's put soy sauce. So going back, I never call it a fusion. It was just, like, something that worked. And for me, like, when I was a little boy, like, eating fideo soup, you know, the noodle soup, my dad will be like, put some soy sauce. And I thought as an adult that everybody will put soy sauce on their video. And I was like, nope, that's actually just you and your family, because you guys are Japsicans, you know?
Fusion is this idea that people are experimenting with different flavors and bringing them together. And this isn't really an experiment for you. This is something you grew up with, and it's natural. This is just the way that you lived your life, and you've been able to take how you learned how to cook, become a professional, and implement that.
Of course. And the greatest things that a lot of people say to me when they over social media, it's like, oh my God, I saw you on TV and your food looks so good. I wish I could taste it. Now Chicago has the opportunity to taste the food that actually I did on Top Chef, that the flavors that I was well known. You know, I could have won the whole thing. I didn't win it. But people now can come and literally be the judge and see what flavors I was showcasing at this, like, beautiful place and have fun, have drinks. Definitely Barrio's a place to be. You know, it will be the place to be. Right now it's amazing. But just imagine having, like, margaritas. Our mezcal selection is amazing. We're working with El Patron, you know, amazing tequila. So just imagine sitting in the summer, having, like, a couple of mezcal shots, tequila shots, margaritas, and having tacos. What else could you ask in Chicago with this weather?
Chef, it's interesting because, yes, you're right. That's a big draw. There's going to be a lot of people who watch Top Chef are going to want to go to Barrio and taste your cuisine just from watching how you built those dishes in the several seasons of Top Chef. Is there a lot of expectation that's put on your shoulder, or stress that people are going to come out and want something that's wild, want something that's different? Oh, Chef Tanabe, he does things that are different. It's going to be crazy. It's going to wow me. I mean, does that change your expectation as a chef, that your reputation precedes you?
Well, of course. The moment you put yourself on TV and then you start cooking on national TV, people have definitely these high expectations. And you can see that next door with Cena Tavern when Fabio came. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go to the Cena Tavern, just the flavors are just amazing. And you know he's behind the stove. You know he's, like, coming out with dishes. So it's the same thing for me. Behind Barrio, I'm there. I'm checking the food. I'm tasting it. And people see the way I cook. You know, I don't take myself too serious, but I will take my food extremely serious. And yes, the expectations are high. Chicago, it's a very foodie city. It sounds kind of douchey to say foodie, but, you know, we're world foodies. But it's like Chicago, they, you know, something that I realize, people like to eat. People are expecting to be impressed. So I'm not going to go and, like, play it safe and do, yeah, like, well, right. You know, if I say it's spicy, it's because it's spicy. If it's sour, it's because it's sour. We want to make people realize that, you know, our Mexican food, it's amazing. It's not your traditional. It's not the, your, like I was saying, heavy on cheese, heavy on beans. Actually, I don't think we have beans, you know. We're probably the only Mexican restaurant with no beans. But listen, it's just, yeah, the bar is really high, and I hope people come, taste it. I walk through the dining room. I want to hear comments. I want to hear the bad things. You know, the good things, I already know it. I want to hear the bad things. I know, how can we be the best Mexican restaurant in the city of Chicago?
What, from your experience that you've had, and you talked about your restaurant in L.A., which is a well-established, respected restaurant, and then also the work in New York as well, what have you learned from running your own restaurant that you apply to Barrio, that you bring for this being the next project, as you evolve as a, not just a chef, but an executive chef and a restaurateur?
I will say the number one thing that I learned, it's, actually, there's so many things. It will be hard to put them together. But one, it's like you never stop learning. And number two, we are here to give service. We're in the service industry. We're here to please. And something that is extremely important to me, it's listening to the comments. What can I do to make your experience better? Never be like, well, you know, I'm on Top Chef, or I was on Top Chef. I know what's better. I know this is good. No, you know what? It's like, well, I think it needs more sauce. I think it needs more acid. I'm always opening. You know, my, you will think that being on TV will make your ego bigger and be like, oh, I'm the best, blah, blah, blah. I'm not. I'm actually became more humble. I got more in contact with my roots of cooking Mexican. And as a business owner, as an executive chef, as somebody who's the face of a massive restaurant like Barrio is, it's about how can we please and make sure we have repeat customers. We want you to come back. Our menu is huge for a reason. We want you to taste 2-3 things and then come back next week. Come back on Sunday. Try something else. You know, the menu is always evolving. We're always trying to please all our guests, you know, like working with David and Luca, the owners of a Dynamic, you know, they're always like, okay, what if we change this? What if we change that? It's always, how can we give the best experience in Chicago?
My last question, just, we have a lot of chefs in here, and a lot of Top Chef alums in Chicago as well. And we'll talk about their lives, and they'll talk about getting a chance to open their own restaurants and whatever. And a lot of times, because of the celebrity, the cult status around you, people just already put you up on a pedestal that you're a celebrity chef. But the life of a chef, an executive chef, is nonstop. Get up early in the morning and you work night. I'm sure that's the case with your restaurants in L.A. and New York. It's not necessarily a celebrity lifestyle. There's a lot of celebrity that goes into it, and being on Top Chef is great. But you're working constantly. How do you approach that? How do you approach a job that you are essentially having to put your blood, sweat, and tears in on every given night?
I couldn't do this without people behind me. You know, right next to my left, I have Cara. She literally runs my life while I'm in Chicago. She wakes me up and it's like, we have a radio interview, a TV show. I owe her all my life in Chicago. In L.A., I have my manager running my restaurant. It's not a celebrity lifestyle. And by the way, I hate calling myself, or I would never dare to say I'm a celebrity. I'm just a cook that cooks.
You're a celebrity chef, though.
I think makes tacos. But I'm saying it's important to have a team that it's loyal, that they care, that they want to be better in what they do. You know, they don't have to be involved with the food part, but, you know, we have great marketing degrees. We have great financial advisors, things like that. It's about creating a good team. And, you know, you said,
Are you a control freak? You're the kind of guy that's like, no, in the kitchen, this is the way it's got to be. I'll do it.
I like to trust. I like to take whatever my chefs have to offer and then embrace it. And I want to make them like, hey, you want to create that special? Yeah, do it. I want to see what they have and trust, because when I'm not there, they're running the whole place. They have to be the one in charge. Right. And by the way, when you were saying that you have a lot of top chefs here in Chicago, yes, but not as charming as me. So, you know. And, with, you know, the Mexican accent is amazing.
Yeah. Chef Katsuji Tanabe is the executive chef at Barrio, the brand new restaurant that's right here in River North on Kinzie. Of course, the celebrity chef from Top Chef, 3 different seasons. Chef Tanabe, thanks so much for taking some time and talking
to
us.
No, thank you so much. And please, guys, let's have a mezcal shot and some churros whenever you guys come to the restaurant, okay?
All right. Good conversation there with Chef. Coming up, one of my favorite segments we do here on The Download. It's very, I love this premise. We can figure out where you're from by how you talk. the author of How to Speak Midwestern. Ted McClellan will be in studio at 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200. You can be a guinea pig, and Ted can figure out where you're from in the Midwest. Or you can get in line, and we can ask you questions about certain phrases. But at the end of the day, there are prizes. It's fun. 312-981-7200. That's coming up. Thank you, Rob. Download here on 720 WGN. Ted McClellan coming up. We're going to find out where you live based on how you talk. Ted McClellan, How to Speak Midwestern. This is the third time we're doing this segment. Love this segment. Gets better each time. 312-981-7200. We'll do that coming up at 10 o'clock. You know, as Rob was talking about, we were kind of going back and forth in the newscast. What's happening over healthcare right now in Washington as they continue what's called the Votorama is fascinating. I don't know enough about parliamentary procedure. I don't know enough about the history of the way that legislative bodies work, especially in this country. And I apologize for not reading up on that to my faithful listeners here in the download. I should have spent all of those, whenever there's a Blackhawks game on, I should be immersing myself in healthcare policy and history, right? I realize now that was a mistake. Spending time with my family I should have understand the history of this kind of debate. But what's happening here, and I'm going to try to break it down, and there are many smarter people than I that are listening to this program probably already understand this, but I'm one of these guys, I'll be totally, totally honest. I gloss over a lot on this topic, especially when you get to where you're at right now, where I don't even know what they're even arguing about. From what I can gather is that Republicans for 8 years have wanted to repeal what they consider to be a failed public health option, healthcare option, called the Affordable Care Act, or as deemed Obamacare. There's a lot of problems with it, and people that are on it have texted into us many a times and said, listen, these premiums are crazy. The health insurance companies are not buying in anymore. They're backing out because they're not making enough money. I've also heard on the other side, hey, I'm a creative, I'm an artist, I'm a someone who wants to start their own business, and I didn't have a chance to actually have any insurance. They wouldn't even insure me if I didn't have a job a year ago, or 8 years ago, or 9 years ago, whatever it is. So I can understand. It's kind of like the idea that we finally have moved in our country to a point where there is a federalized healthcare plan, and there is a debate right now with a majority party in Congress to take that away because it's expensive. And at the end of the day, there's a push by the federal government to say we're not in that business. That is the free market. That's capitalism. That if that has to be mandated, it could be mandated by the states. But we're not in that business. So that's where we're at, right? I feel no politics, no partisan anything. So the question I have is, as the House passes a bill and the media really has been all over it, even the president, as Rob said it's a mean bill. Because the numbers of people that would be kicked off of insurance, we made a determination that we're going to continue federalized healthcare, right? I thought that was what was being debated 4 years ago when there were all these sort of repeal bills. But somewhere along the line, we said, okay, it's there. We have to do it. The idea Republicans were going with was we're going to adjust it and fix it, use the word fix, so that the premiums aren't so high and that there is coverage for everyone how they want it, meaning you don't have to buy a plan you don't want. That's a big thing for Speaker Ryan. He always says that. He always says, you know, too many plans are given things you don't need or want, and that's why your premium's so high. So we're going to fix that. And so what we've seen is that we're not throwing out the idea of a public option or federalized healthcare. We're keeping it. We're just adjusting it. Of course, the CBO comes back and says that's going to bounce 30 million people, then the next one 25 million in 22. So where we're at is that the Senate has determined they don't have a consensus with their majority party because there's so many factions of what the Republicans want to roll back. No one's really in consensus. Is it the idea that there is a mandate for insurance in the first place? That was a big part of Obamacare, that everybody in this country has to have health insurance. And if you have health insurance, then there's also a public option to help you out if you can't afford health insurance from through your employer or what have you. So they want to get rid of that. But then there's others that say, what I really want to do is I want to scale back Medicaid expansion, right? The idea that we're giving way too much money from the federal government to states to help with poor people. That's what I'm really in for. Then there's a third that's like, well, you know, these premiums are way too high. That's Ted Cruz. That's the problem in my constituency is that the premiums are too high. We need to be able to bring this down. Keep the public option, bring the premiums down. And so all of those things, and then the weird stuff that comes into it, like we need to defund Planned Parenthood. What? Who said that? Nothing. You know what I mean? You're like, we're not even talking about that. That's a different thing. Oh, sorry. I'll come back tomorrow. So that's where we're at, right? I feel like, okay, so we're all on the same page here. So what's happening, which I find to be, is that Republican senators can't figure out which of those things to prioritize because those three things, whether it's expansion of Medicaid, the lower premiums, or the public option, they all affect each other one way or the other, right? I mean, if you take away one of those things, the premium goes up. If you take away the individual mandate, then there might be more money to expand Medicaid. So I just feel like they can't figure that part out. So instead of just saying, let's figure that out, let's all work that out, they pass a dummy bill that doesn't really do anything, just to pass something so they can get to the point where they're debating. That's what's happening right now, right? And then it's a bare bones thing that even the senators themselves who voted for it said, this is not the process. This is not the policy. This is a bad idea. This would be a terrible law, as 773 just wrote in, which I think is hilarious. they said, now we're trying to make fake laws. Instead of just fake news, it's fake laws as well. But that's what this is. It's a fake law for them to have a building block so they can add in conference what they really want from the bill. But now they're worried because if they pass it, it gives the way that the government works, give you a bill is a bill speech, the House can sweep in and they can approve the changes that were made for the Senate and be able to send it to the president without the Senate being able to do anything. And there was some move that was made late last night where Speaker Ryan actually, they created something called martial law, that they would have the ability to do a simple majority to pass whatever the Senate passes and be able to get it to the president as quick as they possibly could. And so that alarm bells went off for senators saying, listen, are you going to hijack this? I mean, we're doing this to pass it in good faith so we can all negotiate together as a Republican Party. And Speaker Ryan may have more interest with the president to say, we need a win. Doesn't matter what it is. We'll pass this too and we'll go on. And that's kind of where we're at, where they're scared. And for whatever reason, Speaker Ryan he's been kind of noncommittal that he's not going to do that. As Senator McCain and Senator Graham today said, hey, listen, you know, we need your assurance that you're not going to do this. So I just find it fascinating that they have such lack of trust in each other, the House and the Senate, Republican parties, majority parties. They should all be eating lunch together, right? You think that that's what they do. They just all smoking cigars in some room, eating really fancy steak sandwiches. But no, they're like, they don't trust that Speaker Ryan won't just pass it to give it to President Trump so they can get a win. So they're actually scared of passing something that they know to be a terrible law because they're afraid that it'll be accidentally adopted. That's crazy. I've never heard of that before. That's something that, I mean, politics aside, I'm getting a lot of texts in, you know, long texts, and I'm not going to read the text. I'm not going to, here's the issue, you know, the 650 word text that I'm getting. But I think I understand both sides, and I'm right now, I think this is much more of a debate, particularly about Republican politics than it is about Democrats. Democrats aren't even involved. I love that the Democrats somehow are considered to be the obstructionist party, although they were never asked to come into the table. You know, the door was locked for them to even be in a negotiation. There were no committees for them to pass anything out of. It's pretty clear that they're not wanted in this. I mean, they changed the laws of the Senate and the House so they wouldn't have to have any Democrat votes. They didn't show them the bill. So the idea to say that why aren't Democrats being more reaching across the aisle? Well, that's how you set it all up. I mean, I wonder at the end of the day if, you know, I feel as an American that I can agree with my lawmakers, right? they're smart people, and I feel like politics plays a big role in this, and there's a lot that will be said, and I think you can raise an important issue that a lot of this is about legacy and saying, you know, we need to make this, and this needs to be called Trump Care, not Obamacare. But at the end of the day, I mean, there are a lot of flaws with the first ever federalized healthcare program, and they need to be fixed. And the question right now is, how are we going about it as a society to fix it? To me, it feels like we're making the same mistakes that one party was complaining about for 8 years about the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans were complaining about the Democrats. They're just repeating it. It's almost like our turn to make the mistake. But as they get into this situation, it's very interesting to see that the one area that leader Mitch McConnell is focusing on is the individual mandate. That's where they're starting. They want to take that away. That's the problem. Let's start there. That's the problem, that we make people get insurance. Oh, okay. Well, and I mean, there's a lot of constitutional question about whether or not you can make people buy a product, right? But I mean, they do it for, if you want to drive a car, you got to have car insurance, you know? I mean, there's other insurances as well that I can't have a home. I don't think, can I have a home without some sort of home insurance? But the question is, that's one of the things that they start. That's the pill. That's where the rock, the anchor of this fake bill that they just passed in the Senate is about getting rid of an individual mandate and defunding Planned Parenthood. Just on the list, which I think is hilarious. I mean, you're like all these things about healthcare and whether or not there should be an individual mandate, whether or not we should expand funds for the poor, whether or not, you know, we should have lower premiums. Defund Planned Parenthood. What? Who said that? What? That's not on the, that's not this issue. Yet there's a way that there's always politics that kind of sneak in. You know, also, we don't call them French fries. We call them freedom fries. What? Who said that? So anyway, very interesting. I don't know what this means. I wonder if they'll get level-headed and if they can get out of parliamentary procedure and the cloud that surrounds it, meaning the idea that Speaker Ryan is going to pull a fast one, and they can take a deep breath and they can build a bill that deals with, at the end of the day, keeping a public option for healthcare and making it affordable. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of things I don't see eye to eye with Ted Cruz on, probably everything, Senator Ted Cruz from Texas. But that's all he ever talks about. He's just like, he's the only one that I've heard say, these premiums got to be lower. And I feel like that is what the argument should have been for eight. I thought that was what the argument was for 8 years. It's too high. Premiums are too high. They're, you know, people are complaining. Oh, my God, it's so expensive. You didn't say it was going to be their balloon. Every year they go up. And you hear that's the threat. And the president tweets about it. And the president talked about it's failing because it's too high. The Americans can't afford it. Fix that part. The other stuff I just feel now is like it's I don't know. Like I'm trying to think of like the idea of like I'm going to ruin this Play-Doh or what's the Etch-O-Sketch. And I'm gonna shake it. I'm gonna start again. And you have the same squiggly, crappy lines at the thing that was on there before. And now you're at the point where you're like, do I shake it again, or do I keep going with this and build it because it's mine and my ego won't let me figure this out? But at the end of the day, isn't it all about lower premiums but keeping a public option? I mean, I don't know. That seems reasonable. It doesn't seem partisan. I think that if you asked a Senator Durbin who would be in studio or a Senator Cruz, they'd say the same thing. Now, how you get there, they're going to argue about it, and that's their job, right? We don't have they go there. They're the thought leaders. They're the ones that are supposed to argue on our behalf. But I feel at the end of the day that we're all kind of in the same boat, and that's what we would like to see with a public option, even if you don't use it. All the other stuff, I feel, is politics. Lower premiums, public option. Did I nail it? 101? Kaufman's 101? And that's the real story. Thanks for all the texts on the health insurance. People want to talk about that. It's funny, too. Ed from Joliet is a longtime listener. Love Ed. He's so much fun. He's like, why are you talking about this? I don't usually get into it. But I shy away from it because I'm not paying that much attention to it. But definitely an issue we'll pay attention to.
Tell me more about Parmesan Station. It sounds delicious.
Delicious. Three P's. Pizza, pasta, pastries. There you go. All right, coming up, Ted McClellan's going to join us, and we are going to find out where you're from by how you talk. Right? 312-981-7200. If you'd like to get in on the action, we are talking accents and how to speak Midwestern. Coming up, stay with us. This is good. What is this? I like this.
This is the Yacht Rock intro.
It's got what is this track?
The Great Midwest by John Mellencamp.
There you go.
Is that for real?
That is for real. That's the Beats
it
by Zim.
Like Santa Monica.
There you go. Well, we're back in studio tonight. The author of the book How to Speak Midwestern. In the book, Ted McClellan not only breaks down the elusive regional accents of the Midwest, but he also creates the ultimate glossary of terms used in our area. Phrases like hodag,
yeah,
over there, or my favorite, farty, which is the way people in St. Louis say 40. So here's the game tonight. We're playing for some Lou Malnati's pizza. Let's stump Ted. You can call in or you can text in, and we can guess your regional accent through interrogation, of course. And also the wrinkle of we did this last time as well. If you think you know your region, call us up now. Ted will give you the ultimate quiz. If you win, you can get a copy of his book, How to Speak Midwestern. Ted McClellan, good to see you, buddy.
Hey, good to be back.
I love it. We had such a good time when you were here last time. I'm looking forward to it again. 312-981-7200. So, again, we have two games kind of going on.
Right. 7200.
7200.
Yes.
Again, one of the things that's fun about this is it really does use a lot of the research that you did for the book. The idea that there are certain regions that you've
right. I did a lot of research. I went to every Big Ten bar in Chicago to find out these regional words.
That's so good.
Durkin's, Tavern on Little Fort. What's the Ohio State bar? Whatever that one is.
Tunes or what's
that? No, it's somewhere on the near north side.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an Ohio State bar.
Yeah, and there's like 10 Michigan State bars.
Is the gin mill still there? Is that still around? That
no,
was a Michigan State, right?
The gin
right?
mill's not around, but there's the Grand River Grill.
Okay.
That's the big one now.
Wow, that's a whole other
and
segment.
Duffy's is the Michigan one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a whole new segment just on all we do is list all the Big,
all the
Ten,
Big
bars.
Ten bars.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's get right into it. Let's have some fun tonight. Ted's in studio. People are already on the line. People are texting in as well.
Okay.
Let's go to Bob. Bob, thanks for joining us. Don't tell us where you're from, but thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Okay, you betcha.
You betcha. He's giving it away already.
All right, so all right, Bob. So we'll ask you a couple questions. Before you start, tell us what you had for breakfast so we get an idea of how you speak.
Black coffee and toast.
Okay. And what did you have for dinner? Or did you have dinner or did you have supper?
No, I had dinner and really just some tacos, a couple tacos and guacamole.
Okay, all right. So you got that really broad A sound with the tacos.
Yeah. You betcha.
You betcha. It's big. Okay, so
he's mixing me up here. He's doing some Illinois vowels and some Wisconsin phrases. So
that's all they get you. All right. Because Bob, you have a dual personality here. You've lived your early years somewhere and then now you live somewhere else. So let's
Yep. Well, Bob, do you know what the hodag is?
Not really. Not really.
No? Okay.
No.
Do you know what cheese curds are?
Oh, absolutely. Both fried and just straight squeaky cheese. Oh,
okay, squeaky cheese. So have you spent any time in Wisconsin in your life, living in Wisconsin?
Not living there, visiting there often.
Okay. All right. Let's see.
Let me see if
right.
I can. Okay.
Right,
so
you want to try something?
Yeah,
here?
I want to try something.
All right.
All right. So what do you call the little area that's between the houses?
Between houses could be just the area,
What do we call it? Am I saying that right?
The narrow space between two houses.
Yeah, here in the burbs, we just call it that space between the houses.
All right, well, you just gave away that you're in the burbs.
Well, what do you call athletic footwear?
Sneakers.
Oh, sneakers. Oh,
interesting.
Yeah, that's not very Chicagoan.
No, so you're in Illinois now because you live in the burbs. Yeah. You said that. Yeah. So we got the now. So now we're really trying to figure out the earlier years.
Oh.
Right.
Okay. Let me ask. Can I ask a question? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think I'm going to try a little area. And all of this is based off of Ted's material, and I've just, like a sponge, been sucking it up. I have no actual experience myself. All right. Ready?
Okay.
When you go to a store to buy alcohol, what is it called?
Liquor.
Okay. What do you call the night
liquor
before? What do you call the night before Halloween?
Devil's Night.
Devil's Night. Ah, have you ever lived in Michigan?
Ah, there you go.
You got it. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we were going for Party Store with the one before that.
That's what I was going for.
Do you remember that phrase?
Yeah, Party Store is not a 7-Eleven. It's a party store.
That's right. That's right. Yep. Where are you from in Michigan, Bob?
East side of Detroit.
Okay. All right. Well, since you didn't win, but maybe we'll send you over some leftover Little Caesars instead of some Lou Malnati's.
we'll
send you some cold Little Caesars.
There you go. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for playing.
Okay. Thank you.
That was fun, Bob. Right. There you go. So we got some Michigan, and we didn't have any
Michigan
last
That's the first
time
we've had a Michigan. I've been using these Michigan ones for weeks. Right, finally got a Michigander. Let's talk about the phrase Michigander. People don't know where that comes from.
No, I don't know.
That was actually coined by Illinois Congressman Abraham Lincoln as an insult to Louis Cass, who was the Democratic nominee for president. Back then, gander meant like a silly goose or a fool. So he put the two words together. That's called a portmanteau, and called him a Michigander, and it caught on. It's more distinctive than, Michiganian.
All right, let's try another one before we get to the phrase. We'll do phrase next, but let's Christina. Christina, welcome to the program. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good,
hi, Christina.
Good. So, Christina, don't tell us where you're from, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do for a living, and what you had for breakfast? Mm-hmm.
I'm a stay-at-home mom, and this morning I actually had Carnation instant breakfast.
Okay.
Sometimes I like to have Raisin Bran Crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I also do write some fiction.
Okay, what do you write fiction about?
Been working on a dystopia collection of short stories, and I also like steampunk.
Okay, well, that's all nonfiction these days, but I think there'll be a market for it.
All right, Christina. So Ted's going to ask you a couple questions, try and guess where you're from, okay?
Yeah. Well, we'll go back to the usual. What do you call athletic footwear?
Like tennis shoes?
Okay.
There you go.
Okay. Well, when people are, there's a delay in traffic because people are looking at an accident, what's that called?
Rubbernecking.
Okay. not giving me some Chicago ones. Let's see. What do you call a custard pie sprinkled with nutmeg?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, maybe you're not from Indiana then. Or at least not from central Indiana. Let's see.
Are there different questions for different regions of Indiana?
What's a domer?
A domer?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know that.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Dingus Day?
Yes.
I do, but I can't quite remember what it is.
It's the day after Easter?
The day after Lent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the day after Easter.
Yeah, it's like
everybody pigs out.
Yeah, it's like the Casimir Pulaski Day.
Right. No, it's like the opposite of Punchki Day,
Yeah.
It's a Chicago thing, isn't it?
Well, no, it's actually like a South Bend thing.
Yeah.
A Northern Indiana thing.
Mishawaka, Valparaiso, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All right, let me ask you a question, because I feel like, how do I say, if you're going to go buy alcohol, what's the name of the kind of store that you buy alcohol at?
A liquor store.
Okay. What do you call the night before Halloween?
The night before Halloween?
Yeah.
Halloween Eve.
Okay. What do you call a drinking fountain?
A drinking fountain.
Okay.
A water fountain. Sorry, water fountain.
A water fountain.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So not a lot. You're not giving us a ton here, Christina.
Yeah.
I mean, so far it's been no or pretty standard to each thing. I'm trying to think of other rubbernecking's the only thing that kind of grabbed attention.
I feel like I have one of the most boring accents in the world.
Oh, well, no. If you have a Midwestern accent, so that's it's the most beautiful accent in the world. That's why
there you go. Okay.
I wrote the whole book to demonstrate that.
All right. Well, Christina.
Okay, the flattest Midwestern accent.
The flattest. Yeah. Well, let's try
my thought is that you do live in the Chicago area. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I heard the vowels.
Yeah. And then I'm surprised because I have it in front of me too. I mean, Pete just whispered in my ear that your original spot is North Indiana.
Oh, okay.
So you're good.
Well, no, Pete told me.
Okay.
I'm not good.
But I'm just
wrapping up because we got to hit a break. Yeah. But the point being that all of the Northern Indiana things that Ted asked, you didn't have the answer for.
I should have asked what's the region? Do you know that one?
Oh, Elkhart County.
Kind of close.
East to South Bend. So Dingus Day was ringing a bell, but I wasn't.
Oh, yeah, you'd heard of it.
My family did.
Right. Right.
All right. Thanks, Christina.
Well, what's the custard pie supposed to be?
Oh, sugar cream pie.
Sugar cream pie?
Yeah.
That's the best thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, the Hoosier pie, the state pie.
No, I've heard of that. I just never had one.
Okay.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks, Christina. Okay. Thanks for playing. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I come from Amish country.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah. That's around Elkhart, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks, Christina. Appreciate that. All right, 312-981-7200. Well, Ted McClellan in studio. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We got a lot of people on the line as we're having fun with the Midwestern accent. Stay with us. Ted McClellan in studio. We are guessing where you're from by how you talk. 312-981-7200. And we're also want to get to phrases because Ted's always stumping us with phrases, and the winner can get a book, one of his books, How to Speak Midwestern. Ted's going to be, he's got a couple of events coming up here I want to get to as well before we go on. You can be at the Morton Grove Library on August 6th at 2 o'clock, and also at the Skokie Public Library August 22nd at 7 p.m.
So. Yes. So if you're in the greater near north suburban area, come out and see me.
You have two options.
Yes.
Let's go to Chris. Chris, you got a question, and then we're going to quiz you on a couple of phrases. What's your question?
I want to know if you know what a front room is.
Oh, yeah. The front room is that room facing the street where you keep all your nice furniture covered in plastic, and you only go in there at Christmas or when company comes over. So it's kind of a shortening of front room into one word.
That's exactly what it is.
All right, Chris, you ready? So, Chris, because you gave us one, we're going to give you one now. You're playing.
Right.
So Ted's going to give you a phrase, and you're going to have to guess what it is, what it means, and we'll give you a book if you get it. All right, here we go, Ted.
What is the hawk?
That's a great one.
The bird that flies in the sky.
that is one definition of it. But in the language known as Chicagoese, what is the hawk?
I am a Chicagoan. I have no idea.
Are you a fan? Are you a fan of Lou Rawls?
Who isn't?
Well, I'm not an unfan. But it's not helping me.
But you don't really know his deep cuts. You probably know You'll Never Find, but
right.
But not the.
Maybe I'm not old enough.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, but not Dead End Street.
All right, Chris. Thanks for playing. Thanks for the front room, too.
Thank you.
It was fun. Thank you.
All right.
maybe someone will come in and call in and they'll know what there must be some Lou Rawls fans.
I'm sure.
Listening.
I maybe because I'm from Chicago.
Yeah.
I know that one.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's an easy one. People get that one like that.
Yeah.
You gotta stick them with something from like rural Minnesota.
Oh, well, I can do that.
No, all right. I know you can. All right. Let's go to Jim. Jim, do you know what the hawk is?
Well, they call that the wind sometimes in Chicago.
That's right.
There you go.
This is the spoken word intro to the Lou Rawls song Dead End Street. The hawk, the almighty hawk, the wind. In Chicago, the hawk not only socks it to you, he socks it through you. Like a giant razor blade blowing down the street.
Those are great Lou Rawls impression there, Ted.
Well, hey, thanks. I've been working on it for my book tour.
So there you go, Jim. We're going to send you a book if that's okay. You win tonight. So also, don't tell us where you're from, but tell us a little bit about who you are.
We must know if he knows the hawk.
You know the hawk. So
yeah.
Yeah.
He's not going to win this one.
let me put it this way. No one can guess where I'm from because I've got a West Side accent.
Uh-huh.
Oh, like I'm from Cicero or Melrose or something, but I'm not.
Okay.
Interesting. So that's not where you grew up. You didn't. You don't have any. You just developed West Side accent somehow.
I don't know where it came from, but it's pretty thick West Side. It's not Italian, which would be a better guess.
Right.
But I don't have quite an Italian accent.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, okay. So do you live? Let me before we go on the game, because there's a lot of people I want to play.
Yeah.
So we don't get in a goose chase here.
Yeah.
Are you still are you talking town by town at this point? Are you living in the Chicago area?
No, I'm in the Chicago area.
Oh, yeah.
I've lived in one particular county my whole life.
Okay. But we don't like have it really down to that kind of science. Yeah. You know, we can't guess your zip code. But we'll get the
let
state.
Let me try.
We try to
6060.
I bet he's like a 60.
Where are you from, Jim?
I'm from Deerfield.
Okay.
All right. So you're North Shore guy. North Shore guy. Sounded like you're from Franklin Park. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I like it.
Yep.
All right, Jim. Hold on the line. Right. Hold on the line. 312-981-7200. Ted McClellan in studio.
Sounds like Frank Cucinati. Have you ever had him on the show?
I have not.
Or Alderman Spazzato.
Oh, yeah. We get Alderman up in here.
Yeah.
You can see Ted at the Morton Grove Library. He'll be reading on August 6th, 2 o'clock. Also, the Skokie Public Library, August 22nd at 7 o'clock. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news with Rob Martier. We'll come back because we got some people on the line. William's on the line. There's a couple more. There's also text coming in. People want to play tonight, Ted.
Right.
So that's good. Stay with us.
All right.
We'll continue with Ted McClellan here in just a moment. But first, let's get an update from Rob Martier. Rob, before we start, tell us a little bit about what you do for a living.
And, we're
going to guess where Rob's at.
I'm a news anchor.
Yeah.
Living.
Yeah.
A father of four.
Okay.
I grew up on the north side of Chicago.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. But okay. So
Rob, I gave it away. Did I screw it up?
Yeah. No.
I screwed up.
But Rob has affinity and to an area that is in your book.
Oh, yes.
But
yes.
We're not going to give it away. So Ted's going to
okay.
know. So it's. So ask
I know what
questions.
To do. All right, so if I were to say, referring to a lot of people or members of my family, I would say Yinz.
Oh, well, that's Pittsburgh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. we were gonna talk about a word that's common to Pittsburgh and Chicago.
Yeah.
Yinzers. No, not that one. It starts with a J.
Something off. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're right.
Yeah, that's a Pittsburgh favorite.
But yeah, it's also popular.
In fact, I used it on my way in this afternoon.
Did somebody cut you off in traffic?
Indeed.
Yes. Yeah, that's the exact time you're supposed to use it. But it's only used in Chicago and Pittsburgh.
Right.
It's not an obscene word. I mean, because jag means thorn. It means to prick somebody. So it's just somebody who kind of, you know, pricks you.
Someone who annoys you
or irritates you.
Let's see. Pittsburgh is red up the room. You know, like clean it up.
Yeah.
Gonna do the warsh.
Yeah, do the warsh.
Instead of a rubber band, it's a gum band.
A gum band.
Yeah.
And then what happens when you leave the bathroom and you forget to do something? You leave your fly open.
What
is
that? That one I don't know.
What is that?
Kennywood's open.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Everybody from Pittsburgh knows that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
See,
I should have known better.
I was just in Pittsburgh on Saturday, but I'm just not selling any books there because they don't like to think of themselves as Midwestern. They think of themselves
an
as
a
Northeastern city.
Yeah, it's a great town.
Yeah.
Great town in Pittsburgh. Go to Permane Brothers for some sandwiches.
A great town.
Great town.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. I could
do this
all
have
night.
A house yeah. there?
All night, man.
A house, yeah.
Yeah.
House on the hill.
A house on the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's funny. It creeps in a little bit when I'm back with my family. You know, the icy lights are flowing and
right. Well, somebody told me a story about a guy who from Pittsburgh, and he was in a play, and they had the line tire iron in there, and he just couldn't say it. He kept saying tire iron. So they had to change it to Jack. That's great, man.
I was born in a city that they call the Windy City. They call it the Windy City because of the Hawk. The Hawk. The almighty Hawk. Mr. Wind. Takes care of plenty of business. Now I'm winter time.
The Lou Rawls there for you? There's the Hawk.
He does an even better Lou Rawls impersonation.
He really does. Doug McClellan in studio. He's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. We're talking about accents. We can guess where you're from by how you talk. 312.
Yeah. And what you say.
And 981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you want to try to stump Ted with where you're from in the Midwestern region.
And we're also going to have another quiz. We're going to give away another book.
Okay, another book, another phrase here on the download. All right. You are speaking coming up here. I want to give this before we get into it. Morton Grove Library on August 6th at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then the Skokie Public Library August 22nd at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
All right, let's do some text here so people get some interesting things about their life. And then we'll go to some of the calls. When I came here, this is 847. When I came here from Cleveland, Cleveland area in the 70s, I noticed that my Chicago husband's family and my new coworkers asked, "Are you coming with?"
Yes.
I'd never heard of that one in Ohio.
Ah, see, that's a famous one. I heard it growing up in Michigan, and it's really common in Wisconsin. It's actually a transliteration of a German term, "Ihr kommt mit." So a lot of German words sort of got transliterated over directly into English. Like sometimes in Wisconsin, people will say, "Can you borrow me $5?" And that's because the word in Borgen in German means borrow or lend, so they would use borrow to mean either one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Or buy, you know, we're going by John's.
Right.
You know, buy means two in German. BEI.
And I mean, I guess I always think about it in Chicago, you hear way, way more of the over by.
Yeah.
You know, is that a Chicago thing to say, it's over by the liquor store?
Yeah, it could be a Chicago. It could be a Wisconsin thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's try Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself without saying where you're from. Where you work, what'd you have for breakfast, that kind of thing.
Okay, I am 45. I'm a former employee of Department of Corrections, and I was a 911 dispatcher for 13 years.
Okay.
And I don't eat breakfast.
You don't eat breakfast. So.
No.
That's the most important meal of the day. what did you have for dinner?
I had McDonald's.
All right.
Okay.
But you call it dinner, you don't call it supper.
Right. I call it dinner. Yeah.
All right. So let's start. Okay.
All right. Regions. Well, what's our famous one? What do you call the place where you go to buy beer or liquor?
The liquor store.
The liquor store. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do you call athletic footwear?
Sneakers.
Sneakers.
All right. So sneakers is one. We're listening. Can I ask one?
Yeah.
How do you say the first president of the United States, George?
Washington.
Right. See, he sounds northern. She doesn't sound like he's from southern Illinois or Indiana.
That's always the yeah. All right. Okay, I got another one for you.
Okay.
What do you when you hear the term flatlander, what does that mean?
Flatlander? I have no idea.
Okay.
What about fib?
Fib, that's a lie.
Oh, okay. So I don't think she's from Wisconsin.
She's not from Wisconsin.
Yeah, she would know what those meant. Okay.
All right. Let me ask you, do you know what a horseshoe sandwich is?
Absolutely.
Oh, what is it?
It's got fries and cheese sauce and like a hamburger patty. And
okay, sorry, are you from Central Illinois?
Well, it depends on what you consider central.
Okay, but you're from Illinois somewhere, right?
I'm from Illinois, yes.
All right, are you from south of I-80?
Yeah.
All right. That's close enough, isn't it?
All right. That's close enough. All right. Okay. Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in Chester.
Okay.
Which is deep in Illinois. I currently live in Mount Vernon, which is about 70 miles east of St. Louis.
Yeah, that's where I was going with the Washington. That's
Okay. That's like mainly, I think an older person might have done that, but
yeah.
Somebody under 50 doesn't do it that. Chester, hometown of Popeye. Yeah, let's give him a plug.
I used to live in St. Charles, so I picked up a little bit of the northern stuff along
there you
the way.
Go, yes.
Okay. All right. Well all right. Kudos to Justin for nailing that.
All right. Thanks, Jennifer. Appreciate playing. That was fun. All right. 312-981-7200. All right. So, yeah, 630 asked, what was the pie in Indiana?
Sugar cream pie.
Sugar cream pie.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, well, you know, David Letterman's mom used to talk about making sugar cream pies, you know, because she's from Indianapolis.
Right.
That's the official state pie of Indiana.
920 says, this is Glenn. Glenn says, here's some phrases for you. Flatlander, which is another term for Illinois. We know that one. Uh-huh. Barley pop, which is beer. I've never heard that.
I have never heard that either.
Barley pop.
I think that makes me think that beer up in Wisconsin.
This would be Wisconsin, I guess. Unless maybe they're Illinois. I don't know. But All right. 312-981-7200. Here's what we'll do. We'll take our last break, and then we'll come back, and we will get some last calls in, and then we'll try a new phrase. How about that? You want to try that?
Good. Yeah.
All right. Ted McClellan in studio. Stay with us. Download here, Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. We're guessing where you're from by how you talk. That's what we're doing. Ted McClellan in studio tonight, the author of How to Speak Midwestern. Having a lot of fun giving away books, also giving away pizza coming up here. Ted's going to be at the Morton Grove Library on August 6th at 2 o'clock in the Skokie Public Library, August 22nd, 7 p.m. All right, let's do a phrase.
Okay.
This is a phrase from the book, and I'll randomly pick some people off the line here.
All right.
And we will see if they want to play and if they can guess the phrase of the night. We're playing for one of Ted's books. Let's go to Don. Don.
Hey.
How you doing?
Hello.
All right, Don, you ready to guess this phrase?
Totally, man.
All right, here we go.
Don, what is a pasty?
A pasty is that small starry thing that covers the...
No, that's a pasty. All right.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry.
All right.
Oh, man.
That's good. I was going to point it out to start with. We're not talking about a pasty.
The A and the O. It's the vowel. There's still accents.
No, you got to blame the Bluetooth, man. I'm sorry.
All right. There you go. There you go, Don. That's so good, man. Thanks for calling. George, you ready? You want to play?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right, George, guess this phrase.
What is a pasty?
A pasty.
A pasty.
It's a pasty?
Yep, P-A-S-T-I-E.
P-A-S-T-Y.
Pasty.
P-A-S-T-Y.
Yeah.
Going to have to guess it's some kind of dessert.
No, it's not a dessert.
Sounds like a terrible dessert. Ooh, I'll have the cherry patsy. Pasty.
Maybe it's the sweetness of the Chicago Cubs being the Chicago White Sox.
You're from Chicago. That's it, George. Thank you. Thank you for that, George. All right, let's go back to guessing where someone's from. Let's go to Carolyn. Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
How are you, Carolyn?
Hi, guys.
Ooh, I like this. Yeah. All right. So, Carolyn, tell me a little bit about yourself, where you work. Don't tell us where you live, what you have for breakfast, things like that.
Okay. I'm an interior designer. I have my own firm. I won't plug it. But I've been in Chicago about 10 years. I married a guy from here. Okay. I'm from Ohio.
Don't tell us.
Did she just tell us where she's from?
Yeah. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's from Ohio. Yeah. But are you from like northeastern Ohio?
Well, you know what? We think of ourselves as Easterners.
Yeah.
So that's why I started listening when you talk about people from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
People from Ohio think of themselves as Easterners. They don't think of themselves as Midwesterners.
Yeah. I think people from Cleveland think of themselves as Midwesterners.
Not us.
No.
Not the Shaker Heights crowd.
Oh, hey, that's where my publisher's from Shaker Heights.
What are some Ohio phrases, Ted?
Some Ohio phrases?
Or not even phrases, but what were questions you'd ask for Ohioan?
Like, what do you call the grassy area between the sidewalk and the street?
The tree line.
Yes, the tree line. Yeah.
Why do people in Chicago call it something crazy?
We don't call it anything. But in Akron, it's the Devil Strip. I've never heard that before.
We say put your raggedy furniture on the tree line.
Exactly. You never see a tree there. You just see garbage cans and old lazy boys. All right. What is this sandwich? Kielbasa with coleslaw and French fries smothered in barbecue sauce.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That That's a West Side thing.
Oh,
that's
is it?
That's the West Side of Cleveland.
Oh, wow. I had one. It's called a Polish boy.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a I was going to say a Polish.
But yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that in Chicago though?
No, that's Chicago. It's just a guy. Just called a Polish in Chicago, like a Polish dog. But right, this is like a special thing in Cleveland. Some guy just had all this stuff lying around his restaurant. He put it all in a bun.
There you go.
He invented a uniquely Cleveland thing.
Okay, what's a shoulder sandwich?
A shoulder sandwich? Is it like made from the pork shoulder?
Yeah, but it was all shredded up.
Yeah.
And then they had coleslaw and barbecue sauce on it, and you had to have it on Wonder Bread. It couldn't be on anything else. It had to be on Wonder Bread.
Huh. I did not have that one when I was there. What about, all right, here's one that I love from Cleveland. That's pork cube served on toothpicks.
You must have really been in the high country.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this was a high country. Well, I don't know. Some people there call it city chicken.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Carolyn. I'm going to keep you on hold. And we're going to give you a Luminati's gift certificate for playing along tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. And also, let's get into it because we've got a couple of people. First of all, 224 says, my husband is from Nebraska.
Yeah.
And he says, this is not the Midwest, what you're talking about. Nebraska is.
Well, I would agree Nebraska is the Midwest. Well, you know, there are shifting definitions about what's. I would agree Nebraska is the Midwest. I admit I didn't really include much Nebraska in the book. I guess, you know, where it is depends on where you're from.
Yeah. And then, 740 says, wait a second. We Ohioans are from the Midwest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my publisher is in Cleveland, and mm-hmm. she publishes all. She actually in Shaker Heights, where this one was from, and she would call that part of the Midwest.
All right, so there you go. So at least we're giving some definitions about what the Midwest actually is, right?
Right.
or what counts. All right, so are we ready for, we're going to give the answer. 815 has an answer for the Patsy. Ready?
Oh, okay. Are we going to put them on the line?
No, I've got a text.
Oh, okay.
And they say a pasty is a meat and vegetable dish baked in a pastry crust.
That's correct, and it's found in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it was brought there by miners from Cornwall.
There you go.
Called the Cousin Jacks, and their wives, the Cousin Jennies, wanted them to take a whole meal into the mine, so they put it all in one shell.
All right, there you go. Well, we will give 815 a book. Pete, the 815 wins the book, Ted's book, How to Be a Midwesterner, or
How to Speak Midwestern.
Speak Midwestern, sorry. Yeah. Grew up down by Springfield. Did anyone say supper yet? That's what 630 says.
They say that in Minnesota. I went ice fishing with a guy in Minnesota. He said there's breakfast, dinner, and supper. You eat dinner at noon. And you'd supper at night.
And the last one tonight, and I don't have anything else to give away. We gave away the pizza, and we also but I do want to say that pasties are this is 262.
Yeah.
Right? So it's in Wisconsin number.
Yeah.
Pasties are delicious Cornish meat, potatoes, onions, and suet, all in a turnover pie-like dough, made famous by Shake Rag Street in Mineral Point, Wisconsin. There are variations. The Upper Peninsula of Michigan adds other vegetables.
Right. Well, they put all kinds of stuff in there. There's a bacon cheeseburger pasty, a taco pasty, a Cajun chicken pasty. Yeah. So it's like any other American food now. It's got everything in it.
Yep, they said many nationalities make similar ingredients, different sizes.
I would recommend Joe's Pasty Shop in Ironwood, Michigan.
There you go.
If you want to try it. You can also see the giant fiberglass Hiawatha statue there.
I love it. Ted McClellan, my guest tonight, he's the author of How to Speak Midwestern. He's going to be at the Morton Grove Library on August 6th at 2 o'clock. And the Skokie Public Library, August 22nd at 7 o'clock. Ted, always a pleasure. Man, this is so fun, man. We could do this forever.
Yes.
And I can't wait to have you back. Thanks for being here, bud.
Thank you.
Always fun, man. Ted's so fun. That's so great, and especially because you get to hear from so many great listeners from all around the region. Patty Vasquez coming up here. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago. WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Tomorrow night, we got a packed show. Lyle Lovett was supposed to be on tonight, but he canceled and moved to tomorrow, rescheduled. So we'll talk with Lyle Lovett tomorrow on the program. He's in town, Chicago Theater, coming up Saturday. All right. Yeah, so coming up, Patty Vasquez here. Let's get an update on tonight's news first.